Let me preface these remarks with I never, never, ever believe Israeli figures.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Wednesday, March 20th, 2024. Thank you for joining me today. Sorry for the delay to get started for those that were waiting on the time we set. I'm trying some new things today to see if we can't circumvent some of these problems. You'll see as we go through the show a little few differences, new browsers, some new things we're testing out. And of course, I've tested everything as best I could, set up all the things you know you have to change, all the allowances for video, and nonetheless, there were problems. I just think it was just normal run-of-the-mill glitches and different things that happen when you're changing over processes. But I believe this is better. I like the way it's set up, so you guys give me your thoughts. It probably won't change too much for you, but just the way it feels, looks, the way that the links may show when I post them on the website, so on. Let me know your feedback on this new browser. I think it's Vivaldi is what we're testing out today. But we have a lot to get into, a very positive story today, which is not positive for everybody, but very happy to point out today and that something, a person who's been played a central role in obfuscating the genocide, gaslighting everybody around what's actually happening, both the history around the Zionist Israel, or just what they've been doing in Gaza ever since, Ilan Levy was suspended from his position. And I don't believe it was even today. I believe it was over the last week, and it was only just announced. And it's largely around misinformation around humanitarian aid, but not exactly the way you may think. It's not the, not it. We've proven repeatedly since this started, but more and more, so like the last probably month, that he has been lying, repeatedly lying, knowing he's lying. And we prove this, showing you the information that, I mean, in 15 different ways that what he says he knows he's lying about. And we'll go into more of that as we go through the show, just at least in that segment. But this is more so about the fact that there was another, we'll get into the person individually who is in British Parliament who made a statement. I think David Cameron made a statement about how aid is needed, which, by the way, we all know. And everybody, including their allies, are calling out Israel for blocking that aid. And only the Israeli government, and only really parts of it, are yelling the opposite, and not just yelling the opposite, but saying that we're bringing more food than they need. There is no famine, things like that, like ridiculous claims, mostly stemming from Kogat and Ilan Levy, both of which are involved in this story. But after David Cameron made the statement saying we need more aid, it's desperate, he responded, even including claiming the UN made a certain statement, and he got called out for it by members of parliament in Britain. And essentially the way it spun out, people are feeling it's more about the fact that he pissed off the wrong person in parliament, and it's not so much about the fact that they care that he was lying about aid. I frankly agree with that. Regardless, it specifically came down to the allegation of aid being needed, him defending that, it claiming that it was not, or that it was happening the way it was supposed to be, basically countering their statement, and they said you're wrong, and they called him out, and he got suspended. At the same point, I don't think for a second that Israel cares about, I mean, I could prove to you that most of their government are actively involved or supporting what he was doing. But I think this is about saving face. I think this is about shifting power dynamics. In any case, it makes me very happy to see that one of the most prominent players in the constant propaganda that we're seeing, he and Kogat seem to be sort of trickling a lot of this stuff out to the Eli Davids of the world, is currently suspended. And what that shows you is that there, it really, for the average person, that he was in some way misleading people. The dishonesty is literally rampant. It's everywhere. We've shown you this constantly. But I'm hoping that some of the newer people are going to say, okay, this really does solidify for me that there's a lot going on that they're lying about. Now, every war we see this, but this is a lot more egregious. When we can see the level of famine that's taking place, the starvation, the genocide that's ongoing, and how all of this is meant to sort of cover this up. And it's not even for, as if it would make it any better, a typical war dynamic. The idea of the things we've seen in the past, even though those are rife with false narratives, This is clearly about executing what they've always been trying to execute in regard to ethnic cleansing, occupation, other more so than already in the sense of settlements, because this is already an occupied area, 2005 forward, regardless, it has always been occupied. And the port and the plans we've discussed, and a lot more than that, quite frankly, which is too much to get into for an opening, but the Greater Israel Project and the reality of what their plans truly are from a Zionist perspective. The illusion of the overlap of Judaism is a Zionist ploy that a lot of Jews in the world are finally starting to call out. And it's a quite a large portion. And I, again, like I've said lately, my started to feel like it's getting close to a majority. And I might have always been that way, but we should question those things at the very least. But a lot of other things to get into today. We're going to talk to start about a couple of points that aren't necessarily related to the Israel conversation and go through some funding issues as well that I think are important. We're going to talk about a lot of propaganda today that I think is important to break down, because that story from Ilan Levy sort of opened this to, you know, we got to start questioning, as we all have been, but rehashing the things that we are, should be acknowledging to the newer people to the conversation are also lies. And here's how you can tie it back to the same person and the same agenda. But we're going to go through a lot of those different lies that pertain to the numbers, that pertain to the a couple of points about the hostage conversation, but all these as they relate to the stories we're discussing today, in particular, another terrorist attack by the Israeli government on what appears to be civilians, but the story is still developing. Either way, it was in the West Bank. Then again, like I've been telling you, these are not just IDF or settler attacks. We're talking about bombs falling in the West Bank. It's I don't think most people even really understand that that is, I don't even know how to frame this properly, because out of bounds, illegal, these things don't even matter to the people we're talking about. But the idea being that it's Hamas and it's Gaza and the focus there, yet the amount of children that have died in the West Bank, or the amount of people's homes that have been displaced from, or the amount of people being killed in the West Bank is, as we'll go through, the deadliest year is specifically for children in all of these areas in the West Bank included before October 7th. This has only gotten worse. And we're going to talk about why this is illegal, regardless of what they're claiming is true. And it's pretty clear that it's not, but how this affects the rest of the conversation and how this has been ongoing long before. And that we've gone over the 972 magazine article about the mass assassination program and why at best what they're claiming is completely flimsy and we can prove it. So it really, at the end of the day, to them, what they claim is a credible threat of what may be a terrorist or a kidnapper ends up being as simple as somebody who is in the same building as somebody else, or somebody who's seen in the same areas that these people are, or who might have had a phone call with somebody. And we've talked about this. The magazine article goes over it. And they're murdering not just the people by that association, but people that are around them. Now, this makes a lot more flimsy the argument. Human shields. Well, they're all around there. We'll kill 400 innocent people to get that one Hamas leader in Jabalia refugee camp that turned out not even to be there. But what if that person you didn't know for sure was the Hamas commander? What if it was the idea that we assume he is part of it because of this tangential connection, and then you bomb and kill 400 people? Obviously, even the first part of that was illegal and completely unjustified, no matter how you spin it. Even corporate media was shocked when they said, yeah, we killed them to get, you know, 400 people to get that one person. And again, who wasn't even actually there. But when you can see that they're conflating the most flimsy things to make those arguments, I mean, it gets even more ridiculous. And obviously, I don't need to convince you, seeing as how many people have been killed and the numbers are very obvious. No narrative you spin over this is going to make this make sense. And a lot of the stuff we talk about today is difficult. So let's start with a couple of points I do think are very important that are not related to the larger conversation of today. And this is, I'm trying to get back to, oh, there it is. This one. There we go. Really, I mean, something we've talked about a lot, as you know, for maybe those new to our platform haven't seen us discuss this. This was one of the things that I was proudly, probably one of the earliest platforms covering, if not the, you guys can decide for yourself. I remember talking about this alongside groups like, I think it was Inversionism and the expose way back in 2021, even before that. And this is about the collapsing athlete conversation, which has never really stopped. And really, it's about collapsing human beings conversation. But what I highlighted all the way back then, and here I'll include some of these articles for you. This was one of the ones, the earlier ones from 2021. Children / athletes are collapsing and dying from, quote, sudden cardiac arrest at unprecedented levels. Now, no, this was not my opinion. For those new to this, I went over the FIFA article that was about a 7 or 8 year time frame. I went over the NIH study about collapsing athletes, and both of them showed you staggering the numbers were not even comparable. We're talking about an amount that they claimed over a 7-8 year period, which we had already surpassed within the first half of 2021. And even going to 2022, even worse. And again, my point wasn't to say that we knew what was causing it. Of course, it's obvious what is likely the culprit, and I would say provably in many cases. But the point was simple that, well, if we don't know, then why isn't everybody freaking out about why? And the argument became, well, it's not that. You're a conspiracy theorist, and that means it's not happening. Well, clearly they're collapsing. Clearly we have excess death. Connect the dots. No, but the point is they didn't want to. And what I was most frustrated about is not the criminals denying the crime. Obviously that's going to happen. It's all the other average people out there lost in the paradigm that kept shouting things like this down because, well, the TV said so. And honestly, there's a lot of people that did that that didn't, you know, they're maybe petty, but they weren't necessarily evil people with bad intentions. They just wanted to be right and didn't like that your politics said that they were wrong and just shouted you down. The problem is it's that provable. So is East Palestine. So is a lot of these conversations that we never see any real change in. But things seem to be shifting positively right now. In some levels of awareness around the world, I'm hoping that bleeds in further. If we can just claw this out of the two-party illusion sides, the screamers, the people controlling the perception of a lot of people that don't realize they're being played. We could actually see positive change. Okay, I'm done preaching. The point is that this is important and real and obvious. Ozzy17 shared this today. And he's been, again, one of the people, by the way, I should also shout out since he's doing this today, that he, from the very beginning, he's one of the people that I've seen call this out. And he's saying here, all the way down, 17th, simply going, oh, another athlete has collapsed. And I almost guarantee you that there's been examples of this throughout the last month and even before. And it just takes somebody like Ozzy17 to kind of point it out, highlight it, and then people start putting the dots together. But the point is there is a person collapsing. And my point is not, you feel free to dive through this. I'm willing to bet you most people these days have had some level of a shot. So it's not hard to say that that could be related and it should not be dismissed because of that. The ubiquitous nature is definitely part of the game. But then of course, again, we saw another one. And the point is, just cut to the chase, he's saying the footballer collapsed on live TV this week, in 1 week, which really adds up with what we've seen since 2020. 30-year-old Egyptian national footballer. Again, now they make the argument that they're athletes and they're pushing their bodies, which is why this makes sense, but that's not true. The reality has always been it's more unlikely for somebody who is at peak condition, who is always taking care of their body, and that doesn't mean every one of them. But of course, then you weigh that with the fact that you are pushing and to extreme limits with your body. But you overlap that with just other character. You find that it is not as high as they tend to say it is. But there is a level of risk that goes above some of these healthy average people. But my point is the same. You go back to any year before 2020. And in fact, like I said, let's take the FIFA study specifically, 8-year period, if I remember correctly. It was a long years, I think 7 or 8. And that was comparing all of these athletes just in that one area. My point was that you can compare the same levels and it is astronomically higher. And it's just sad to see that, you know, these people are dropping dead on the field. And again, the main point we made back then is go back before this. Look at athletes. Look at in Canada, they talk about the teachers. There's always people seem to focus in on what they think they're connecting to. But the point is, it's just people. People are dying because they took these dangerous shots and they're collapsing all over the place. And you find studies that prove myocarditis connection that they denied and still kind of do to this very day, or thrombosis or blood clots or all these things that clearly connected this, but we're baffled by it. We're baffled. It just makes you mad, doesn't it, that we know this, truly know it. Thank you, Ozzy, for continuing to highlight this. I'm glad people are staying on that. I'll include the link here, by the way, to just kind of like the general collapsing athletes archive, so you can look all the times we've talked about this repeatedly all the way since then, and still some people try to deny this. Now, on some other points, I want to include this since we were talking about the deep fake conversation. And again, I just want to laugh at the whole Michael Rapaport thing that I think is so interesting. And you know, I don't even know, you guys can decide where you think that landed. I still think it's most logical to assume nobody could be that stupid just to walk out into a hallway while they know they're doing something that they, you know, would be seen as bad. In any case, the way he keeps screaming about, like the way he's acting after the fact, makes it seem almost like maybe he did. Maybe he is that stupid. Who ultimately knows? But my point was always not whether it was real. It's about the fact that the deep fake conversation is being hoisted upon us right now. South Korea speaks up about the problem, right? We have all these different things popping up. Who was it? The other one, Rabbi Shmuley says, oh, I'm being deep faked. all kind of within a process of a couple of days, even though it's been here, I get the sense this is coming more. And this was, shared this with me saying, you know, Mario Knopfball, which by the way, just, you know, if he's reporting it, you should double check, make sure it's actually happening. But this is something I've seen reported. Fake AI live stream on YouTube scamming listeners. Interesting. Which is, by the way, hardly new. I've seen this happen so many times over the years. But what's interesting is how it's being focused on now by Mr. Big, totally not mainstream alternative media, Mario Knopfball, who seems to just kind of pick out what he's supposed to. I mean, you could decide whether it's intentional or not. Toe these lines in certain ways. But what's interesting is it's the Patrick Beck David show. But apparently it's not. Like, I'm not even sure how to take this because based on the writing, it's all been deleted now. They're saying, like, you can even see down here, YouTube spoke up and said, thanks for flagging this. We've terminated the channel that are, get out of there. It violates our community guidelines. Oh, I'm sorry. The point was that on this show, they're claiming, or apparently it was a deep fake where they're basically saying, scan this QR code and we'll give you extra Bitcoin or you'll make more Bitcoin back. And one of those classic cryptocurrency scams. But my point is for the podcast, apparently this was done over the top of their show, right? So the Patrick Beth David show is showing, but and it's lined up with what he looks like he's saying, but it's actually not him or it's not what he said, or at least that's the story. I don't know how I can find a way to confirm that seeing as how it's been deleted other than looking at the original. But my point is it's hard to know if it could have just been added to you by them or somebody else. In any case, the point is this exists. We know that. How is it not happening crazy prominent all over the place with people? I mean, people can make this stuff on their phones right now. I just think this is fascinating to me, and it's terrifying when you really think about it. How long until this becomes so prominent that literally nothing means anything? And oh, what do we need? Digital IDs. By the way, Derek is writing something about that coming up very soon because I'm definitely making sure I use some of the funds that you guys donated to keep some of the writing going, both Robert and Derek. And of course, Whitney, when she wants to continue writing again, there's a lot going on over there. Now, just so you guys know, on that note, Whitney, Derek, Robert, Taylor, Matt, you know, now with Jason and everybody, I mean, this is going to be the team forever. And I mean that unless they choose to go elsewhere, regardless of financial issues or being attacked. You know, these are people that, when I've discussed this with each of them, this is something that we all believe in much bigger than just, you know, I mean, obviously, I'm going to always fund them for their work. My point is that we all believe in the meaning of what we're doing. And we all believe we're going to continue doing this together for as long as it takes. Just so you guys know that, just since that popped into my head. But this is crazy. And I think this is going to happen towards a lot of creators like us, where we are going to be manipulated, lied about, and so on. And then they're going to force this in to make you can't access the internet without things like this. In any case, very strange. Be careful about stuff like this. I've got people pretending to be me in multiple locations on Telegram. So just heads up, guys, be careful. Question everything. Now, into the conversation of Israel and specifically about funding, I find this very interesting. Mark Dubowitz. Now, this actually, I should make this point about this for the whole show. A lot of these things kind of tie back to the propaganda angle, which they largely do with these conversations. And this is about, you know, a lot of these are trying to get ahead of what they see coming. Most of this is pretty reactive. Well, this is technically reactive too. That's pretty much how Zionist propaganda seems to work, where this is happening and they come out with a reactive article to kind of counteract what people are already seeing. But that's pretty, you know, reactive propaganda doesn't usually work too well because a narrative's already been set. They're already reading it. They already have an idea and you're over here going, no, wait, this is the story. Most people don't, you know, they gravitate towards the first thought. Now, this is my point is that we know for a fact that Israel is paying people to protest, to be involved, to post things online. Now, just before you freak out about that, that's been publicly discussed. They've admitted this. Of course, the angle is not that we're lying and propagandizing. It's that we're promoting and funding the people that support us, and we want to support the Jewish community, and that's clear. And if you think that's not happening, you need to take a step back and just look it up. It's very clear. I hate to use look it up term, but the point is that Israel and multiple groups have openly discussed the fact that they're doing this to push back against the bad guy terrorist narrative or whatever. And I'll show you some examples. That's not to say that there's not, I almost guarantee there's examples of that happening in reverse. I don't have any evidence of it, but I just think that's likely in any circumstance that people would, you know, in their minds, in any side, you might think that you're on the right side of things and that your funding is not bad. You're just trying to help the narrative, right? So you can see how. But this comes down to facts as always, what we can prove. And what can we prove? Well, that very clearly the Israeli government is actively promoting things for narratives, funding stars, including Michael Rappaport, to take visits to Israel in, as long as they continue promoting the narrative, which, by the way, they probably would have done anyway. But that still means the same thing, though. or funding people to go to protests, which we saw public posts, right? They're giving money to people to go out and protest at these massive protests and so on. So we come out with an article like this. What many suspected, now confirmed by this newspaper, pro-Palestine and increasingly pro-Hamas, which I don't even know why he thinks he can say that. You know, this conflation, just increasingly pro. Well, some people may think that, some people may not. But people who are pro-Palestine, these protests that we see are very adamant about, I can probably even tell you that some of them may actually believe they can support Hamas, but not want to say it publicly because they'll use it against them. I don't even think that's the majority, but either way, the point is that very few of them are actually openly saying that. So the fact that they just try to make that the case means they're assuming at best, but it says protesters are being paid to protest, he says, to block highways and roads, to intimidate and threaten Jews and non-Jews, to cause chaos. Well, I like that point right there because, okay, well, then all you had to say was threaten people, right? Because the point is always to try to shoehorn this into specifically against Jewish people and hatred and racism. Well, if you're intimidating Jews and non-Jews alike, well, then all you had to say was intimidating people, which inherently means it has nothing to do with race or religion. But yeah, I think that's always very, very clear. Dave says, I bet they don't get as much money as the IDF trolls and AIPAC supporters. These are a little out of date. I suspect you have had pay raises since then. And he's just highlighting one of these things that you see circulating online that, you know, there. My point is this is provable stuff happening, whether this is a screenshot of a real one or not. You guys can decide for yourself. The point is not what he posted there. We'll come to the real examples in a minute, but just to show you that people are calling them out immediately. But here's the article he posts. So you'd expect, since he's highlighting this as the evidence we all knew was there, and even the title, protesters paid to take part. Well, it's pretty interesting. Let's look what the Toronto Sun believes means paid to take part, because the whole point of the article build up in the beginning is, oh, we knew it. That's even the article. They're being paid to protest. What many have suspected has now been confirmed. It's the same thing. Very slanted perspective, right? Just, you know, I'll show you why. They've got professional, basically saying, you know, they got signs, they got all this stuff, which none of that has to do with what you can prove is being paid. All you can see is this. And this is what it comes back to. This is what the collective said, where they're citing this narrative from. It says this fund, the fund they're highlighting here, the Solidarity Fund, is to help cover costs. And by the way, this is the group that is claiming that they're being paid to protest. And this is what they're saying. The fund is to help cover costs incurred when organizing or participating in local actions. Okay. It says this can include, but not limited to, the cost of lost wages, supplies, items, fundraising, paid speakers. Okay. Well, that's not the same as being paid to protest. That is groups funding things that you may need while there, including being the wages being lost. Now, I'm not going to pretend that you couldn't make a similar argument. That maybe they are paying everybody and this is just the way they lie about it. Like, I'm not going to be as ridiculously one-sided as the people that we're talking about. But what I'm trying to highlight is that this is not even remotely the same as going, come out and be here and we'll give you $250. This is saying that we will cover the cost that you may, you know, wages lost because you're coming out to support this cause, or supplies that you may want to use or maybe we'll provide, like signs. Sure. Yes. Items for fundraising, paying speakers to come be there to speak. That's not the same thing. Now, speakers, is you could argue that maybe the overlap with the famous people on the other side, but what we're discussing is directly paying large groups of people to simply be present. That would then you can argue that may not be genuine, right? This is people that would be there either way, and these are the costs that are being helped to help people that may lose their wages and so on. So feel free to read it. That is the argument. And yet that's the kind of the claim. We got them. I mean, if that's the best you have. By the way, that same fund concept works for just about literally any group you could talk about, any group that is in some way mobilized and not just a group of six people out there with signs. Like, that's how these things operate. It's a group and they have funds and they allot those funds to work for their agendas. It's the same thing on literally any side. Now, if that fund is going to say, hey, come here and we'll give you $50, that's different. And that's what we're seeing across the board on the Israeli side of this conversation. So here's the point about that. Maximilian, first of all, Josh Kadish says, it turns out that the organization that has been bringing celebrities such as Noah Schapp, Nikita Dragon, or Dragoon, I don't know, Michael Rapaport, Scooter Braun, Tiffany Haddish, and others on propaganda trips to Israel, which we've seen them with their roundup and walking through the propaganda tour. It's a right-wing Israel advocacy group. Over the past 18 months, the Maccabee Task Force has allegedly brought over 150 celebrities and social media influencers on fully subsidized trips to Israel in exchange for them posting pro-Israel content during and after the trip. Now, of course, that's exactly the reality. But you see, if you're on the side of you believe or are pretending this is the right side of things, you could say, well, I'm going to be posting. They're simply, you know, it's the same game. You could say that they're simply just allowing, they're saying, we'll promote you doing what you're already going to do. Here's some subsidization for that support. But you realize that at the end of the day, you're bribing to come do this and go back and do what we said. Not the same as supplying signs to be there to protest. And you can read about it. It's written. It's publicly discussed. It's just all about the framing, right? And this is what Maximilian says. So all these celebrities that have traveled to Israel and use their social media to promote and defend Israel do so because they're paid? Well, I don't know if that's all of them, but provably some of them, yes. And now, again, they'd probably be supporting this anyway. Like a Michael Rapaport, he's been very rabidly pro-Zionist as far as I've ever seen him on social media. So he'd happily take the money for something he was already going to do. Doesn't change the reality, though. Now, this is somebody responding, just highlighting, you know, every accusation is a confession. Now, this is a random screenshot he included. But my point is, this is, feel free to grab it. Don't take my word for it, especially since it's a screenshot. Make sure you look it up. But this was just one I grabbed last second to include the reality, because this was circulating. This is widely seen that they were offering college students to attend these rallies, and they were going to pay them for it. Now, we just talked about Al-Shifa Hospital on the 18th. And the horrifying reality that it really is in the ongoing situation there. That people, this is the second time now in a large sense. There's plenty more than two times, but in a large sense that they have besieged and attacked this hospital and killed innocent people inside of it. And plenty of doctors, not local people that have come from London and so on, like Abu Sita, who is currently outside Gaza, who's telling you everything he saw, which is horrifying. And we'll go over some of those to start from other people as well. And by the way, that they arrested the Al Jazeera team and they're deliberately starving Gaza. Now, we're going to add to pretty much all those things today. Now, I wanted to also point out before we go into it, which is why I mentioned the show, that I played the Al Jazeera video about the bombing of the area. Now, you know, first of all, as a news organization, or really anybody posting content from a news perspective, under the concept of fair use, you have a legal right to use that kind of clip for criticism, for commentary. That's why these news groups, you can share little clips. You can't just play a 2-hour video, right? The point is, though, you can share this and that's fair use. That's the lead. There's no copyright claim there. So what's strange to me is that I shared their video while I was on this in my Clear News broadcast. We're well-known group. And the link was included. I said their name while I was playing, gave them full credit for it. And weirdly enough, not like it matters, by the way, because it's a pirate channel. I don't care about YouTube anyway, but I found it strange that Al Jazeera hit me with a strike on this pirate channel for using that video. And it says then that when you read through it, requested by Al Jazeera. And you can see it was my IDF, once again, strikes Al-Shifa, link to the video itself, which is right here. And you remember we showed this. I just think that's strange. Like, maybe YouTube initiated that and they just kind of hit it without thinking. I don't know. I think that's strange. And the other part was funny was that they say, oh, you know, you can remove the strike if you go to copyright school. It's just so funny. This people just so ridiculous. It's all about social engineering to try to like train you how to think about this, when the reality is I'm not the one violating copyright here. What I'm doing is legally protected under fair use, but they don't care about that. In any case, if you want to know more about the ongoing criminal activity the Israeli government is conducting around inside Al-Shifa Hospital, this is a great breakdown from the Electronic Intifada. It's pretty much everything we've already been telling you, what we discussed last time, but they do a really great job of breaking down, you know, the reality that there were 30,000 plus people that were there, that they were all got forced out. And I showed you the videos and the images, pushing people in their wheelchairs down the rocky road because they got pushed out of Al-Shifa Hospital. And there's no proof of any kind, or even the evidence they showed you was flimsy at best. Another table with a couple of guns and a bag on it. No, that was it. Headquarters. Nobody's believing their narrative at this point, not even the corporate media. And yet they're somehow still letting them murder people. Here's another one of these propagandists. And this guy, by the way, is an international human rights lawyer, which he should be embarrassed for even claiming anymore. He's saying Hamas have, yet again, turned Al-Shifa Hospital into a command and control center. So how embarrassing this is to just for... And by the way, you're going to notice twice today, The Telegraph seems to be aggressively towing the line. Like, of all these platforms, that seems to be the one that is, like, not even blinking. Hamas are cruelly turning hospitals into targets. Read the article. The evidence is Israel says about everything. And the bottom line is that you can't prove what you said last time. And everything you showed was even laughed at by groups like the BBC. They said that doesn't prove anything. And even Wolf Blitzer brought it up on an interview with the redhead colonel. I forget his name now, in the Israeli military, and said, well, you never proved it last time. And you said, yes, we did. And you're done. They didn't, guys. Not even the media thinks they proved it. It's clear. They did not prove what they claimed. They lied about Al-Shifa. And I've talked about that. Caught lying about Al-Shifa Hospital. What you're looking at in the picture, that's supposed to be the command center. Ignore the videos we showed about highly produced videos of tunnels and massive centers and command. Nope, this is what they showed you. And this moron over here on the left just didn't even turn around in time. And I'll actually include this one. Because we talked about, where is it? Right here. The proof and the reality, which even former Prime Minister Barack on the record said, Israel built that command center. Not the one that they pretended they were going to find. Not the room they showed you, but the real thing that was down there, which whatever, for whatever reason they didn't show, because I think what the evidence revealed is that it wasn't even, either wasn't in use, or it very clearly suggested that it was exactly what we told you, that it was built in the 80s by the Israeli government. And that was admitted publicly on CNN by former Prime Minister Barack and plenty of others. And even recently said it again, by the way, built a command center under the working hospital. While there was work, that was while it was a publicly working hospital. They built their own military setup and then they blamed Hamas for it. In any case, he's claiming that they did it again, using the most innocent as human shields. These are just desperate narratives. None of this has been proven. And quite frankly, the evidence suggests it's not even happening. In this Telegraph op-ed, he explains, and that's exactly why it's happening, because he wrote an article and claimed the narrative as fact. To follow up on this, if you want to know more about Al-Shifa, it's still ongoing, unfortunately. Now, we're going to quickly want to make a point about resistance in general. I just want to highlight that again, but I want to make sure we understand that this is not a new situation as we go into the discussion again about how people are starving and how Elon Levy had a massive role in maintaining that famine. Dilly Hussein points out, this British Palestinian kickboxer, who basically said publicly, we are staying in this land, on this land, and we do not believe in the international community or the human rights supported by countries that claim to be civilized. We believe in our resistance. Which, of course, you're going to see people like Oren down here, who's already been caught lying about how there's not a famine, even though we can prove it. And we proved his video, which I'll show you in a second, was a fake video that they lied about and put a fake date on it. And he got caught by Twitter. Here he is saying, deport him. And you'll see more comments like that. Why? Because what they're trying to pretend is that what he meant was violence and racism, which is not the truth. Well, arguably, you could say violence in the sense of armed resistance, but he did not mean terrorism. He did not mean what they're trying to pretend he means by resistance. And of course, the other parts, we do not believe in the international community jumping on that saying, see, we told you, while Israel's actively going, we don't care what the community says. We don't believe in the UN. Even Michael Rappaport just wrote that on Twitter. We don't believe in the UN. It's just so painful how they will rapidly and constantly be like, the United Nations is racist and they're all Hamas and we can legislate anywhere in the world. International law does not bound up. They've said all of those things recently. And yet then when this guy says, which is what they're intentionally misinterpreting, they go, see, they think the thing that we just said too. No, they make it about how only they don't believe in the internet. It's just, they're desperate. But what he means, he does not believe in this international community that is lying about what they're actually doing. Or he says the human rights, not in general, but the ones supported by countries that claim to be civilized. So the illusion of it. The groups that pretend what they're protecting are human rights when they're going around murdering people in starving countries. That's what he means. I don't believe that fake international community either. I believe in the groups that might potentially build some kind of community that actually care about human rights, the real human rights, the idea of free movement, the idea of self-determination. That is what he's actually talking about. And he gets into the idea of we believe in our resistance. Why? Because it's a legally protected act. Now, look, if you want to argue all day long that you think Hamas on October 7th committed a terrorist act, you could think that all you want. I disagree with you, but putting that aside for a minute, you must at least acknowledge that in a context, completely in a vacuum, There is such a thing as armed resistance, and it is legally protected under international law per the Fourth Geneva Convention. And that means, because if it's an occupied territory, again, in a vacuum, right, with a random situation, and that occupied territory, no matter rather how long it's occupied, decides one day to pick up arms and fight back, they don't need a reason. And they can murder people, or rather kill people in the context of war. The point is military targets. Now, I don't want any of that to happen. I don't like the idea of war or violence in any sense. But if we're going to pretend we're acknowledging international law, the reality stands that this is that an occupied territory has the right to pick up arms and fight against military targets for their own independence. You know, sort of like the founding fathers and our and the revolution for, you know, the American Intifada, right? That's what we're talking about. Now, taking it back to this, you know, from removing this imaginary situation and highlighting the fact that Gaza is provably occupied and all of Palestine, going back to the document I just read to you from 1978, all the way forward, all of Palestine, including and not specifically isolated to West Bank and Gaza, they are occupied, meaning they have the right to armed resistance. Now, yes, as I've always said, crimes that might have and were committed, such as kidnapping civilians, and I say might have in the sense of if they were killing civilians, which at this point we should be very suspicious about what actually happened, but you can prove they took civilians back to Gaza. That's a crime. That should be regarded as a crime. But going forward, the resistance needs to be regarded as resistance because that's what it was, provably, under every single metric and name and I mean, everything. There's the only thing that makes that not is the fact that they go terrorism. Well, that historically, you know what they called the American patriots fighting for the independence of the United States? They called them terrorists. Doesn't mean that one's right and one's wrong, or they're both right or they're both wrong. What it means is that it's easy to make that happen or call them that when you just don't like what they're fighting for. So on that note, Arsen Otrovsky, again, the one lying about what's happening in general, says, remember, we wouldn't be where we are today, meaning post-October 7th, if it weren't for what Hamas did on October 7th. Like, I mean, just stating that publicly on like for the 15th time in the last 6 days, it's embarrassing because it's clear propaganda. Because if people think that, they don't need you to say it. So all that's for is to try to go, hey, look over here. This is the truth. Just change your mind. That's all. It's just propaganda. And it's also provably false. To pretend like it just randomly started on October 7th, nobody anywhere thinks that. People that are claiming that's the case, they know that's not true. It's painfully obvious. And he says every civilian killed or starving, whether in Israel or Gaza, I'm pretty sure there's no starving people in Israel, is entirely 100% the fault of Hamas. I don't even know how you could pretend a child realizes that's ridiculous. Even if you argue that everything they're doing is justified, it's still their fault. They're still the one choosing to starve and kill people. But let's go to the clip that I wanted to play. Now, let's be honest, shares this. We wouldn't be here today if they didn't commit genocide 75 years ago, and every day since, by the way. Maybe you could dispute the word genocide, but war crimes for sure, as Israel continues to do to this day. So let's play this clip. I probably could just play it from here. I think it's all subtitles, but just recognizing that these are people speaking about what they did all the way back in the first Nakba and since then. And by the way, you can see the same things being said right today as they point to people in Gaza. And that's his point. To this very day, it's the same thing.
בית אחרי בית, בית אחרי בית, פיצוץ נעלה, פיצוץ נעלה, ואנשים בורחים, את מבינה?
House after house, we burned them out.
אני אומר שלא, דת נשים, נשים וטף.
They asked him, were there children, people in there? He goes, yeah, who said they weren't? Women, children? I mean, they didn't care. A lot of these guys that existed, these are old school Zionists back from the original Nakba, they laugh. We've shown you the images. They laugh as they talk about raping women and killing children. It's not my, you could, it's public information.
נשים פצועות וגברים, בטח.
היו לנו 28 מטענים של חומרי נפט. מתקרמים לבניין, מלכים את חומר הנפט, מפעילים אותו, ופוצצים את הבניין, הכל יושב.
Load up with everyone in it.
בשביל להפעיל נכבשה ליסים.
לומר לך שאנחנו לא ירינו? ירינו.
This is obviously a compilation, right? But the reality is there's so many different videos out there and compilations of many different to current all the way back to as old as you can see. Now, let's not forget the oldest reservist. He's an old from the Lehi Zionist, you know, foundational. But Dan Cohen's written about it. Went by the Lehi party. That's like a foundational aspect of Zionism where he's saying, kill them all. Everybody, children, everybody. If you don't kill them first, they'll come kill us. And he's talking about all Palestinians. He's very explicit about it.
יושבים בחדר
He's this guy, family sitting in a room, he says. Tossing a grenade. How familiar, doesn't it? No wonder. The grenade blows them to bits. Yeah, it was horrible. He said, but what could we do? Classic. That's what we're dealing with. That's right to this very day. Now, here, just in case you were confused about how this was only post October 7th and you're believing Oren and the rest of the people lying to you, it's not hard to see. Here's 972 Magazine, Israeli platform. This was the deadliest year for Palestinians, children, since 2014. No, not published today, published December 14th, 2021. Now, that one's important because it goes back even further than the one that we've been seeing. The one from I got it next. I forget the name of the platform. The one that shows you just before. But this was the same thing going back since 2014, meaning it's deadly then. But even this is the deadliest year since 2014, which is 2021, just for Palestinian children. Why weren't we screaming about it then? Why aren't we screaming about it now? Only one side matters for certain people in this world. Here is the New Arab. That's what it was called. This is, and this was citing a UNICEF document, right? So if you don't like the platform, the point is it's public information. 2023. Guess what? The deadliest year for Palestinian children. Weird how it just keeps getting more and more deadly for children, right? I mean, there's just no way you can possibly misunderstand that. These are not children strapped to legs everywhere, guys. These are children like we're seeing today. They're in the West Bank, for example, and everywhere else, being killed in their beds. Starved to death. Mike, this next clip, guys. I'm gonna play this video first, and I'm just gonna warn you way ahead of time. I actually forgot this was in here. The one beneath this that I'm gonna show you next. I had a really hard time with this today. And this is the kind of thing that should really reflect on the next segment about Elon Levy and the rest of them actively lying and allowing stuff like this to happen. I'm only going to show a very quick the clip. I can't even bring myself to play it, guys. It's a video of a mother holding her child that was burned so badly that her eyelids are burned off, her face looks like plastic. It's horrifying, and yet she's singing because she's just trying to maintain some level of humanity, you know. And I'm sorry, it kills me, guys. This is such a hard topic. This child is just trying to live, and people in the comments are you know, acting like it's fake or that it's, and I'll tell you, when I first saw this, I'm thinking to myself, this is not real. This is so, it's like your mind doesn't even want to accept what you're looking at. And I just want people to realize that this is the reality of what children are living through, not just adults. And this has nothing to do with whether the human shields or whatever the nonsense they're spitting out. These are just random people in most cases that are in safe zones, who are getting bombed and what they're living through. I mean, imagine what this does to their families and going forward and the whole blowback conversation. So first, I'm going to say it again in a second, but first I'm going to play this. This is Nick Maynard from Oxford, a surgeon. He says, one child I'll never forget, and this is not even the same child, by the way, had burned so bad you could see her face bones. They knew there was no chance of her surviving, but no morphine to give her. So not only was she inevitably going to die, but she would die in agony. As one story times thousands that are happening every day because we debate about whether or not this is defending themselves or because they're not. I mean, again, it's almost insulting to pretend like there's even a narrative to discuss when this is going on. And it's not some emotional point, guys. Move the emotion from it if that's possible. The reality is the numbers are, it's unbelievably obvious. I've said this many times. Let's just take half the number of what they're pretending is disputable, and it's not, even though their own military has admitted that these are accurate numbers. Let's just pretend it's 7,000 children. What narrative are you about to say that's going to make me go, oh, okay, that's why that makes sense. That's why that's okay that they all starved to death and died and burned and died of thirst and got their parents blown up in front of them, legs amputated without. I mean, how do you possibly stand there and pretend like anything would explain that? Let's not forget the narrative of human shields has been floated relentlessly with nothing to back it up. And in the beginning, human rights groups and even the UN made the point to say it is on you to prove that's the reality. And they have not yet, not once, not one image, not one claim, not one thing other than a claim that we said it's happening. And then it just falls into the background as they bomb relentlessly without question. Here's what he said.
devastating burns in small children. One child that I'll never forget had burns so bad you could see her facial bones. We knew there was no chance of her surviving that, but there was no morphine to give her. So not only was she inevitably going to die, but she would die in agony. And what made it even worse, that there was nowhere for her to go and die. So she was just left on the floor of the emergency department to die.
So sorry for the momentary derailment. I just want to point out that the point from yesterday, Peter, since you're asking, was I was unaware of whatever you guys were talking about. All I can see is somebody, you know, spamming the chat. And so that's what we take care of. So don't take it personally. Orwell said it was, she explained to me what was happening. So in any case, I'm going to show you this next one, okay? Oh, and by the way, on that note, since I brought it up, apparently there's all sorts of stuff going on with the chat. It's YouTube, guys. YouTube is just an endless censorship dumpster fire at this point. But apparently people are unable to like post what they're trying to say. A lot of the people that are constant, you know, people that are mods or with this channel often ultimately are like, they aren't even able to like log into the chat. And apparently people are like he was like, you can see entering one letter at a time. At least it was the other day. He was kind of joking this time. But in any case, the point is that it's very clear suppression, censorship just about everywhere. And again, going back to this horrifying thing we're about to talk about, is because we're talking about stuff that is real, that people need to see. Now, I'm just going to quickly show you so you understand what we're talking about. If I don't recommend you let children see this, I recommend that this is something that look at it if you like to. I think it's important that we know what's happening. Now, this is Khaleesi that said this: the Palestinian child sings despite being severely burned by Israeli bomb strikes, during which she lost her eyelids. Just look at the courage. Now, it doesn't even look real. And it's just so hard to realize that people are living through this. I don't know. It just got to me. I mean, it's hard to even watch, guys. It really is. It's rough. And it's happening. Now, one thing that I'm seeing that is at least somewhat positive, and I don't think it's because they care. I think it's because people are calling them out. Canada is now saying that they're going to stop delivering arms to Israel. Now, does that mean that they're going to do it secretly? Probably. In any case, I said, well, it's quickly becoming clear that the U.S. government is the sole reason, outside of the obvious being Israeli actions, that this genocide continues. Trudeau government will stop sending arms to Israel. Now, here's how they responded to this, or at least one of their propagandists did, saying Canada's foreign arms minister says the Trudeau government will cease arms exports to Israel, which it's just there's arms are going left and right all over the world by Pete, you know, and of course it's only, you know, support and aid when the good guys in the quotes do it. But when their adversaries do it, it's secret arms trafficking. It's all the same thing. They're all profiting off the sale of murderous weapons. They just pretend when you do murder, then it's good stuff because we're good murderers, right? But in any case, the point is that to say that they stopped exporting arms, well, you could pretend obviously they say, if you read it, there's issues about what's going on, and there's rightly reasons to be concerned about how they're being used, clearly. My point in saying this is that you could to immediately make this about some kind of a racial or a detriment. It's crazy to me that everything becomes, I don't want to only make it about a racial thing. I'm trying to think of the right word for this, that just, you know, it is. Canada suggests they're going to stop sending arms exports. And the point, I'll just read what she said, and you'll see my points. I can't find the words for it. Canada has broadcast to every terror group on this planet that they can murder, maim, rape, and abduct civilians, and there's no consequences for them. In fact, Canada will punish the victim. Just think about how wild that is. So you're telling us, first of all, by not sending you weapons, that you don't, well, they find realistically, you don't need their financial support. Why Israel is just sucking up all the support of all of these groups while they have plenty of financial support of their own. And then to suggest by not doing that, that they're punishing you for what? For murdering civilians? Like the game is to suggest that you're being punished, or rather supporting terrorism by not letting you use weapons to keep killing children. Like, look, you realize, since October 7th, and again, the entire discussion of who killed who needs to be fleshed out further. Tomorrow, I'm probably going to do a specific kind of watch along with this documentary I was sent. I think it's interesting. and it gets into stuff like that. The Hannibal directive, guys, we need to realize that I don't think we can prove anybody. That doesn't mean that they didn't prove was specifically killed by Jess Tomas. I've seen videos that show all sorts of things, but I can't find one, if you have sent it to me, that shows explicit shoot, kill right in front of you, civilian. Not IDF, not military, but civilian. And that's important because it doesn't mean they didn't. But clearly, we know that the IDF shot their own people. We know that they intended to in many cases. So we should be very clearly questioning whether any of them were. Certainly is a possibility, right? So my point in all of this is the idea that we know since then, the only thing that's been happening, even the argument of the rockets you point out, has anybody been killed? Are they even actually flying? I mean, I know Lebanon has shot rockets, but the point is they play their little game about how, well, there's no guidance systems, which makes them indiscriminate, which makes that a war crime. You've heard that too, right? They say that endlessly, except when they want to, like they just shared yesterday or today. Here's all the rockets that Lebanon sent. Each one has an address, and they're going to kill. How is that not a war? Oh, wait, so you mean the unguided rockets that you just told us were a crime because they were unguided now suddenly are directed towards your homes and have addresses? They lie about effing everything. It's infuriating. But my point here is that we know since then that we haven't seen anything other than the constant death of children and innocent people in Gaza. Even if you want to take the numbers they claim they've killed of Hamas, which, by the way, they've yet to prove any of it, it's still a huge and endless and insurmountable number of human civilians. But let's pretend like you're punishing the innocent victim by not sending arms to a group that's been called genocidal by the world court, or meritus anyway. But it says to broadcast to every terror group. Well, isn't that exactly what the Zionism has been doing? Yes. That's, of course, Mr. We Lie, We Cheat, We Seal Pompeo, who weirdly seems to keep sticking his finger in this conversation and just stating, like, I mean, I probably just did one of his interns just to asking Israel, what do you want us to say? Got it. Establishing a Palestinian state, he says, is in response to October 7th massacre would be a clear reward for terrorism. As if this, like, what do you, like, what, like, we've never talked about two-state solution going back for, like, it's just so infuriating. They think you're this dumb. That's truly how these people, they think you are this stupid. They think we all are this stupid. As I said, you just described the history of Zionism and the U.S. government using acts of extreme violence to achieve political ends at the expense of those you claim to fight for. From terrorist acts on the British to bombing Jews to drive them to migrate, Zionism has always used terrorism. So you're just pretty much projecting, is the point.
Iraqi Jews were convinced that Israel had a hand in uprooting them. After the 1948 war, there was mounting popular hostility towards the Jews in Iraq. 5 bombs exploded in Jewish sites. The series of bombs created a panic which led more and more Jews to register to leave the country. I met an elderly friend of my mother's, an Iraqi Jew called Yaakov Karkoukli, who had been in the Zionist underground. One member of his group, Yosef Basri, a very, very intelligent Jewish lawyer, and his assistant, Shalom Saleh Shalom, were responsible for 3 out of the 5 bombs. Basri's controller was an Israeli intelligence officer named Max Binet, who was based in Tehran.
Right, so Avi Shalom, the very highly regarded British Israeli historian, is it, and by the way, this is personal experience, his family and him, where he grew up, talking about the fact that this is what Zionism did. Attacked its own people in order to drive into the area that they wanted to create. Not because God gave it to them, because Britain gave it to them, because they were bombing them, because it was a terrorist attack. That's rewarding terrorism. That's what that is. And the history of that is very clear, as we've shown you in other shows. The CIA, in their own documents about Hanaga, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, and the Lehi group, and the Zionists, the history, that they were willing to sacrifice the Jews in Arab countries to achieve their state. I mean, how do you frame that as anything but disingenuous? Essentially, since you wanted to understand that Zionism aligned itself with Nazi Germany, and as Dan Cohen has discussed many times, well into the final solution. And so how do you make sense of that? How do you make sense of the reality that they pretended the state was based to protect against what they were involved in? at least were complicit with ignoring. I mean, that's crazy to me. So my point here is it's obvious that what they're doing is projecting this onto what they, you know, based on what accuse them of that, which you are guilty. It's classic tactic. And here is Israel Katz, Israel's Ministry of Foreign Affairs. We're literally bring them home in his bio. Well, then bring them home. You've refused countless offers since the first week to bring them all home. And all the families are screaming to bring them home. Full exchange for full exchange as Hamas keeps offering. And all you do is pretend that Hamas refuses when you offer a pause that nobody wants. But he says, it's regrettable that the Canadian government is taking a step that undermines Israel's right to self-defense against Hamas terrorists. Right. So the fact that they're not giving you weapons or even selling you weapons somehow means, and again, this translates most often to giving them weapons, is them undermining your right to self-defense? So your self-defense doesn't exist without Canadian weapons? I mean, see, this is just such a flimsy setup. And it's not self-defense, seeing as how you're attacking for 5 months. But anyway, it says you who have committed terrible crimes against humanity, not that I can see. There's been crimes for sure. But the provable claims of atrocity propaganda have been debunked in almost every case and against innocent Israeli civilians. Well, again, I don't have proof that any one of these civilians were actually killed by Hamas. And their evidence is overwhelming to show that some of them were killed by the IDF. So I'll let you figure that out, including the elderly, women, and children. History will judge Canada's current action harshly. No, it won't. They're on the right side of history, but only briefly for 1 second after they've been allowing this and probably will still after this. But it says Israel will continue to fight until Hamas is destroyed and all hostages are returned home. Well, it doesn't make sense to fight until they're returned home because the fighting is what is, in fact, killing them. We'll go over that shortly. Now, this is the new browser setup, by the way, which I find interesting. As you can see for the podcast, you can't see it, but basically, there's a way to do this where you have like these subsections of these tabs, which I find interesting, but it might get confusing. Just pointing it out because I thought it was interesting. So this is a little quick pre-section about starvation before we get into the Elon Levy point. And Elon Mizrazi points out, in the past, we just shared this, by the way, yesterday or on the 18th about Al-Shifa, which he was talking about. And he's captioning that and highlighting that going forward. In the past 24 hours, this is today he posted it, Israeli media reports that 90 Hamas terrorists were terminated at Al-Shifa Hospital. It's amazing. This is actually when we get into Elon point, why I think it's so hilarious that now you have people in positions of authority who are just standing up and going, oh yeah, prove it. And this is what happened since, where Elon's suspended, which there's so many 90 Hamas terrorists, which we'll get into again, the fact that they arrested a bunch of civilians, most of which were let go, but they go 90 were killed. There's no evidence of that. There's no evidence that any Hamas terrorists have been killed so far. In fact, they haven't shown you anything. Most of these are civilians, and I think they know that if they ultimately release who it was, that you'll be able to backwardly prove that they were never part of Hamas. Probably most of these, all of them probably. But you guys can decide, and you know that's not a for sure thing. The reality is, I would also argue that it's likely that there's at least some Hamas members that get accidentally killed while they're bombing all of their own hostages, or just indiscriminately. But he goes on to say that they were terminated at Al-Shifa Hospital, suggesting one of the biggest massacres of this genocide is unfolding, his point being that they're lying about that. So who are they actually killing inside Gaza's largest medical center? In the same time frame, all Gazan personnel responsible for delivering aid, weirdly coincidental, not at all, to the surviving population have been assassinated. Which is the point we talked about, the individual that was basically taking charge of the aid in this post, you know, destructive area where basically he was the head of the police engagement that was taking care of the aid situations. Robert gave me a bunch of information that, of course, I got after the last show. But ultimately, this person, he's not Hamas. Per Robert M. Lakesh and plenty of others doing their research. Now, there is a level of overlap going back a long way for a time frame like we talked about when Hamas was running everything. Because Israel funded that and made that the reality in order to use that very point to argue they shouldn't get a two-state solution. Problem, reaction, solution. That's what it was. My point is that he is not just what they're claiming is, not at all, not the title, not definitely not Hamas today. The point is that he was trying to take charge and actually trying to aid to people that needed it. And then they assassinated him. And it's obvious that right after Al-Shifa gets some level of, you know, I shouldn't even call it treatment to be real, but there's some level of treatment back up and running. And then we get the guy operating there trying to set up aid deliveries for these people. And what do? They rush in and kill him and shut it down. And arresting people that were there helping treatment. I mean, it's clear what they're doing. they're destroying all the infrastructure. They can't let them start helping each other. They can't let them start actually getting aid in other ways. The point is that this is obvious about shutting down any lifeline for people starving to death. He says, at the same time, Netanyahu declared Gazans are free to leave, perhaps to the new port, which I'll make a point out later, in a well-choreographed leak. Because the point is, they don't want to leave. So this is an argument to keep suggesting, like, you know, from this open-air prison, which in the past, or even probably still right now, most people aren't even literally allowed to leave. But just to leak that out is to sort of suggest, like, to get the conversation going that we're, you know, here, let's let them go to the poor. Let them go to Egypt. Well, it's up to them. They totally can. They don't want to. That's been the whole point, is that you keep pretending like voluntary migration is happening and they're just not going. It says, this means Israel is hell-bent on the final destruction and annexation of Gaza, which I agree with, and a full ethnic cleansing of it. This also means that pressures for it to stop are growing, even from its allies. And this is how it responds, going even harder, which is pretty typical for Israel. And it also means that no concrete steps have been taken by the U.S. to actually stop what he calls the Gaza Holocaust, which is literally the right word for it. Netanyahu has not yet been declared a war criminal by anyone. But this is surely the greatest man-made catastrophe and war crime campaign of the 21st century. 100%. Arnaud Bertrand points out, and this is one of the things that we really need to start understanding, this is not just narratives being spun. There are metrics being met here. There are human rights groups and different people investigating from the ground and elsewhere and meeting things that are, this is where we get into the level, like what these words truly mean. Famine, starvation. He says, how can this be allowed to happen in the 21st century? And before I even read this, remember, what we're watching right now, the level of famine is unprecedented. Understand that. This is coming from the UN, Oxfam, the amount of people. And again, it's the same kind of concept as the how many people, you know, we're talking about a per capita kind of conversation. The time frame and the amount of people and the size of the area we're talking about, we've never seen this before. And as I think it was, I don't think it was Oxfam. I have him up here in one of these videos I'll show you next. But he's basically telling you, and he's with one of these groups, that the amount of people going from whatever they were at before, which was already food insecure, to the level they're at now and the time they did is unprecedented. How many people it was. This is a starvation campaign, which is what we told you from the very beginning. What do you think no food, no water, no fuel meant? And the point is that they're choosing to make this happen. 9 out of 10 people can't even eat. I think it was 1 out of 3, every children under 2 are literally at the point of starving to death that day. I mean, it's just unreal. The cruelty of starving an entire population is just unfathomable, he writes. Unfathomable. The IPC, which here's the actual link, the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, Gaza Strip. Famine is imminent as 1.1 million people, half the Gaza Strip, experience catastrophic food insecurity. See, this is my point about why I'm so frustrated and why I've been harping on the lies that Ilan Levy have been using, because this is what's actually going on. Children are dying as we're speaking, and he's over here saying, no, they've got bread everywhere. That is, again, like I said about COGAT, that's worse than terrorism. You're not just murdering people, you're murdering people and pretending you're not, and then even asking for praise. The IPC, he writes, which is the Global Authority Institution for Hunger Assessment, on which governments and multilateral organizations rely, now determines that half the population in Gaza is in the IPC phase 5. Catastrophic famine. That is the highest level. The worst classification, where starvation, death, destruction, extremely critical acute malnutrition levels are evident. Okay, so what's the next game? Is the IPC Hamas now? Are they secretly working for Hamas? I mean, at what point does this become so absurdly obvious that even the people that are towing these lines for desperate reasons finally pull back? I don't know. But this is just disgusting. This is, like I said in the beginning, and every day it goes further, it's even more obvious. This is going to be talked about for centuries. And I mean that. The first time I said this, I said 1,000 years. And I actually think that's accurate. We're talking about things that we've talked about. You know, like you can look up massive war actions or famines that go back hundreds and hundreds of years. We talk about them because they're unprecedented. This will change. And this is not just because it's so serious and big and unprecedented. It's because of how much is hinging around this. The entire world conversation is changing because Israel was clumsily forcing this in. which is horrifying, but there's a positive byproduct from that, that people finally see through it. Oh, oops, I thought I closed that. I was going to get mad. So here, unfortunately, as a sad image. I can't hear it, but the child just crying. And you can see how food insecure this child is. It says, Mohammed Najjar before dying from Israel-inflicted starvation. This is happening in 2024 in space-age live streaming. Died. This child is now dead because he starved to death. So Danielle says, to falsely accuse the Jewish state, I don't know who's doing that, the Jewish state of deliberately starving Palestinians is reminiscent of the medieval blood libel. Here we go. Filling Elon's place, apparently. By making such outrageous claims, he's literally citing Joseph Borla, high representative for the EU for foreign affairs and security policy, who has publicly said, he has been on a path. They are starving and you're doing it on purpose. Paraphrasing. But he says outrageous claims, which we can prove, by the way, that not only defames Israel, he says, but also, even if unintended, fans the flames of anti-Semitism. That's always the defense. Who knows? Who cares if it's even real? You can't point out they're doing bad things because that fans the flames of anti-Semitism. Doesn't that sound familiar? You can't point out the truth because it's Russian propaganda. It's the same thing. Amid an explosion, he says, of anti-Jewish hatred and terror threats across Europe. Hardly. Many of those terror threats come from the Zionist lobby. Oh, no, that's probably the truth. And he says from Iran, which he refuses to list as a terror organization. What, the military of Iran? You guys are cartoons. He says the HR thus put himself outside the EU consensus. Not really. Just amongst Zionist rabid followers, the people and most of the governments even now are very aware of what's going on. And I don't think by choice. I think most of them would happily ignore the genocide if it suited their interests, but they're losing things because of it. But he goes on to say that harms EU-Israel relations, which is, that's the point for, he's saying, you're going to ruin our relationship, which is almost a threat, and undermines the standing of his office and institution. No, it doesn't. And that's just desperately pathetic. But the point, I said, I know, in case you want to see what he said, here's Joseph Borla saying, the simple, obvious fact, which I shared earlier, Gaza is facing famine. Okay, well, every authority on that is saying that, everybody. And he says 100% of the people are acutely food insecure. 100%. 70% facing famine. Well, here's the crazy part about it. I keep showing you this about how they're the Zionist government, Israeli politicians will claim everything, both sides of the argument, if it works for them. Here's the point. What do they keep telling us? Well, Hamas is stealing all the aid. Well, when it really gets pushed, the argument is, well, whatever's happening is Hamas's fault because they're stealing it. Well, okay, then wouldn't you say there is a famine then? Because Hamas is responsible? Well, that's what you say when that argument works for you. But another side of it, you go, it's an outrageous claim, it's false. Well, okay, so if Hamas is stealing the aid and they're not starving, are you claiming Hamas is giving them that aid? Doesn't that mean they're not stealing it? But if they are stealing it and you do believe that, then wouldn't there be a famine? Oops. There's so many gaping holes in these narratives. It would be funny if it wasn't so disgusting. That's what I said. Oh, technically, I went even further, and this is the point that brings us to the next couple of tweets here. Is he says to falsely claim the Jewish state, and this is how they do this. I said nobody is accusing Jews of anything here in this specific conversation. Somebody somewhere is for sure. It says it's the Israeli government being accused. And that you conflate that with Judaism, a religion, is despicable and overtly racist. Israel's accused of starving Palestinians because they're openly starving Palestinians and praising it publicly. Hashtag Zionism is anti-Semitism, because it's the truth. Zionism is the biggest enemy of Jews in the world, if you fully understand what's going on. And, well, so let's give you some examples of how this game is being played still. I mean, this is how pathetic this is. So somebody posted this image of Netanyahu as Nosferatu, I believe, right? A vampire. Now, the argument is that he's, you know, you're sucking the life out of people, you're killing people for your benefit, whatever. It's an analogy. So any bad guy to frame them as a vampire. I don't see any connection to this anti-Semitic allegation other than he happens to be somebody who you claim is in a Jewish state. And you can even say who claims to be Jewish is probably just a Zionist. The point, though, is it's only that because of that. As he says, in this is today's La Presse cartoon. He says, this is not okay. He says, you can dislike Netanyahu. You can disagree with his policies. You cannot make anti-Semitic tropes. What about, why do you assume it's anti-Semitic? Would it be anti-Semitic if it was any other, like, let's just, what if it was Biden? If he did the same thing about Biden, which would be just as likely because he's doing the same thing, would that be anti-Semitic? Well, no, you would say no, because he's not a Jew, apparently, right? But so the argument becomes anything that criticizes anybody that's Jewish in the mind of a Zionist manipulator is used to say you can't because you're racist. Is that because he was Jewish? No, it's because it's a crime they're committing. I mean, this is how mind-blowing this is, and it's becoming quite obvious to people, finally. There's nothing about this that's it's anti-Semitic other than you hoisting that on top of it. It is being done because he's a villain and he's murdering people. Now, Marco Rubio, because this is what these false people do, steps in and toes the line because of his Zionist connections or whatever the lobbying money coming to him is, or because he just chose to because he's a bad person. Jerusalem Post writes, the Florida Las Olas Chabad Jewish Center was ravaged by a fire in an act of arson early Saturday morning, causing damage to the synagogue, Hebrew school, community center. Okay. No claim, surprisingly enough, by the Jerusalem Post in this tweet of any kind of anti-Semitism or hate crime or any, right? But of course, Mr. Rubio can't, you know, miss an opportunity to push a propaganda line. So he says, yet another unjustified attack on a synagogue. Is that what happened? Then he goes even further. The rising wave of anti-Semitism in our country after Hamas's terrorist attack must be condemned. Okay. Well, I said, did you even read it? Or just rush as fast as you could to fan those racial divisions and hatred in order to push more draconian censorship measures based on Israeli Zionist interests? I guess you missed that they literally explicitly said it was not a hate crime. It says the fire department said that it's based on information it had at the time. The arson was an isolated incident and not considered a hate crime. And if you actually read into it, it even seems to suggest that they're not even positive that it was somebody deliberate, right? It could be, either way, the point is not a hate crime. So for you to fold this into being an attack because it's anti-Semitism is exactly what we're all highlighting. It is doing things like that that actually undermines the real anti-Semitism. The fact that there is actual people out there that literally, desperately hate Palestinians. Yeah, because they're Semites. Or whatever you want to call anti-Semitism meaning. There are racist people out there that truly hate Jewish people, truly hate Palestinians. And it's real. And they would go to extreme lengths. I mean, I could probably show you how these people right here hate Palestinians. The point, though, is by pointing this out and conflating something that you can even prove isn't, all you're doing is watering that down. And that is why today people are not even shocked by these claims anymore or the unjust allegations of being that. And as we highlighted just recently, and this is one of the clips Jason made for us on the Twitter. By the way, if you didn't know, posting this for T-Lab on both the Twitter, our MeWe account, Gab, and a lot of other places. Actually, I think Gab no longer lets us post video. But anyway, this is an important clip. What you're looking at, what you can see for the podcast or for the show is the captain of the police, or I believe it was the captain. In any case, an authority figure who spoke up and said, what the whole allegation of this, remember, Jewish students locked in their campus, that all these big people, Ben Shapiro, they all shared it and said, how dare you? They're threatening Jews. It was all fake. All fake. The police captain came up and said they weren't a threat. The door was not locked. The door was not even barricaded. That's the whole story. All you got is a 13-second clip of some Jewish people standing in a library while there was a peaceful protest outside. And they turned that into, they were barricaded, they were threatened, and they're attacking Jews everywhere. It was a complete lie. And yet that still got used to spin out to be they're attacking everywhere. Now, I'm not going to say that means there's no Jews being attacked anywhere. There's people of every religion being attacked anywhere, probably at some case, in some point in the world. My argument, as statistics and other than the lies were being spun about Free Palestine, meaning whatever they want it to be, the stats show that there's no more risk to the Jewish people than any other minority or anybody else. There's racism. Yes, people can be attacked. That shouldn't be okay, but it happens. To pretend some outsized issue here is only being driven because that's what Zionism needs to control this entire conversation. Here's the Israeli War Room posting this. A Jewish-owned restaurant in New York City has been vandalized by pro-Palestinian rioters. And it says, this is definitely anti-Zionism, in quotes, not anti-Semitic. Well, okay, then you're probably right, actually. What they're trying to do is conflate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, as if that's the game we're playing. Then we're going, no, it's anti-Zionist. Well, read what actually, guess what it says for the podcast. It says, form line here to support genocide. That's it. And then there's paint on the wall. Okay? So what about that is anti-Semitic? What about that is even anti-Zionist? It's only because you claim it's a Jewish-owned restaurant, which my point is, I can almost promise you they're doing that because they're supporting what's going on in Gaza. Now, maybe that's because they're Jewish and they believe that's what they're supposed to do. But that's your connection. What they're doing is anybody who is supporting genocide, that's why they say from a line here to support genocide. Now, that's what it clearly suggests. I don't know these people, but I don't see any other indication to make this about Zionism or anti-Semitism. That's a desperate effort. Now, you could argue that they secretly think that, but for them to claim that or use that, you know, it's just pathetic. Doesn't it then suggest that there's not a big problem if they have to contort things that aren't that into what they claim it is? Well, here's why people like Marco Rubio are constantly pushing lines. And it's not just the Israeli lobby. It's lobbying in general. But the biggest lobby that we can see, the Israeli lobby. AIPAC just said all 17 AIPAC-endorsed candidates won their primary election tonight. Weird. Or not at all. Because that's literally what happens almost every time. Almost exactly. I think last time it was almost everybody but one. Clearly, as being pro-Israel is good policy and good politics. As people say down here, crazy how you openly flaunt election meddling like this. I mean, let's realize, oh, here's Ian Carroll as well. He's, oh, look, a foreign nation bought 17 more U.S. politicians. Let's brag about it. I mean, it's crazy. AIPAC, it pretends to be an American group, but even then, it's publicly acting in the interest of Israel. But realize that this is, you could argue it's not even a U.S. entity. Either way, it's very clearly acting in the interest of a foreign government and bragging about that. And I simply said, not hard to see what's happening here. And it has little to do with Judaism. But they're pushed that in as best they can. Now, lastly, on this little segment, Asita Kanko points out, unacceptable, the degradation of public property by so-called pro-Palestinians in a Belgian town last night with the joy expressed by a certain number of local politicians is unacceptable. Wow, sounds serious. Must have been some pretty big damage, right? Well, let's go through it. How much will it cost to clean this up? The taxpayer is again insulted. And in fact, these vandals don't even condemn Hamas, which I don't know how you know that because you don't know who did it, but you just assume it must be pro-Palestinian. So again, you're broad stroking anybody you put in this category as pro-Palestinian, which even that is not the same thing in multiple categories, but that they don't condemn Hamas. What? They're the large pro-Palestinian spokesperson that speaks for everybody in the country and the world. Like, what do you mean they don't talk about Hamas? Plenty of people do. Plenty of them don't. My point is they're always trying to broad stroke them into one entity so it's easier to dehumanize them. Very classic. But they don't even condemn Hamas, this broad group of multifaceted people. So in the end, the truth is, because he knows, right? They hate Jews. And you knew it was coming. And don't even like the Palestinians. What? And given their actions, they don't respect their country in Europe either. Well, that's talk about a leaping joy. So you say pro-Palestinian, which you say means they don't condemn Hamas, which from there you jump to means they hate Jews, and they also don't like Palestinians. Or they literally do because they're literally what you just said is pro-Palestine, but whatever. Let's just anything you can do to contort it into they hate Jewish people. It's just plainly flimsy. But they go on, say, it is the right of those who wish to do so to demonstrate for Palestine, but don't destroy public property and our cities and at least condemn Hamas, which again, it's not one static group. These people are children. And show consideration for the victims of these terrorists. It says at least condemn Hamas and show consideration for the victims of these terrorists. Yeah, again, just, you know, only October 7th. Who cares about all the children dying in Gaza? The situation in the Middle East is objectively tragic, but you got to love that. That's the passing line. But have you noticed that these so-called pro-Palestinians, again, one massive static group, according to him, always ask Israel to make an effort to, but never condemn Hamas. Always ask Israel to make an effort to what? Condemn their genocide? Have you ever heard one single Israeli politician ever say they condemn or even an individual what's going on in Gaza? Plenty of people in the United States, even those fighting for ceasefire, I've never heard one of them go, I condemn all of it. But they never condemn Hamas. That's also a lie, seeing as how a lot of them have people that get pressured online on some talk show. They go, yes, I do. But why? Some of them, yes. As you all know, we've seen it. But he says they don't demand the release of hostages. Yeah, they literally do. They're literally calling for a ceasefire. I don't understand why these people are this uninformed. And again, this is a member of European Parliament. Think about how embarrassing that is. They don't demand the release of hostages. Ceasefire is about the hostages. He either knows that and doesn't care or is that stupid. They never demonstrate for anything else. I mean, I just don't even know where that's coming from. What about like Code Pink and Jews for Ceasefire? I can literally prove to you they protested for endless things because that's what they do. But whatever works for your narrative, don't let the facts get in the way. They don't respect Europe. They shout anti-Semitic slogans. Well, only because you make Free Palestine into being anti-Semitic. They equate Hamas with Palestinians. What? That's what you're doing. That's exactly the opposite, in fact. He says they ask Israel to go home and wait for October 7th to happen again. No, they literally don't. They want Europe to continue paying UNRWA and reject the idea of replacing UNRWA. Yeah, because it's something you just arbitrarily replace. It is the right of return. It's the keeping records that go back to 1948 in regard to the displacement, ethnic cleansing, the Nakba of average people, and the fact that it was a United Nations organization that was set up in order to keep people ultimately fed, school, all sorts of things. And because you just pretend they're Hamas, you pretend that makes sense. But it says they claim October 7th massacre never happened. Literally not. I just don't even know this. I actually begin to think this member of parliament is just like a Nancy Pelosi. They actually think this. Why? Because they were told. Some staff member, this Zionist, gave them talking points, bullet points, and they literally just believe it. Who knows? Because all of this is completely ridiculous. Most of what he's saying is actually the opposite. They claim it never happened. This is bad faith. It says, when will they demonstrate against Hamas? Well, when will you demonstrate against Israel? It's a stupid question, right? The point is that some people are demonstrating against Israel that are Israeli. Some people that are in fighting for self-determination for Palestine are saying Hamas is bad. But it's a stupid argument to say that you have to fight against the thing that you claim was justified. Not the crimes, but the armed resistance. But saying that makes them claim you support Hamas, which is not the same thing. Oversimplification is a go-to for these groups. But against UNRWA, it says, which is keeping Palestinians in a disastrous situation, again, whole cloth lies. It's the exact opposite. When are they going to demonstrate against the payment of so-called martyrs by the Palestinian Authority? Yeah, again, this is meant to hide the idea that they paid Hamas, that they literally funded Hamas, and what they're talking about, as Robert has broken down, payments to people killed by Israel, right? Which means that random baby that got killed today, money would go to the family, right? The random father that got killed while they bombed in Gaza, or alternatively, a member of a group that got killed in the process. You could argue it's only about those attacking, but they don't have to kill someone to get money, which is what they're claiming. It is about funds that have been set aside to martyrs, whether killed by Israel for no reason or whether they were fighting in resistance. But for them, they have to make it all about terrorism. When will they ask the EU to give money to proper organizations for good Palestinians in Israel, for the good of Palestinians? That's what UNRWA is. Anyway, all that aside, all the damage that all of this was spurred on because all the damage and all the... Let's look at what that was. Wow. Look at the damage. Look at how they tore it all apart. Guys, they literally painted a Palestinian flag on one angle of these steps. Do you know how many, how many people of these, you go look through this person's discussions. Look at how many groups they support that have they've dumped paint on paintings or have blocked streets or have done torn statues down. But of course, this is because you don't like the policy. These people are not, it's like the same people in our country for Americans. I don't think these people even really understand what's going on. And it's beginning to show the outlines of the fact that none of these people are actually in control, that these are puppets in a larger game, and that these people are just put in position because they're not very bright and that they're willing to go along with what they're, in many cases, probably think they're in control because they're not very bright. Or they're lying to you about things while people starve to death. You can decide for yourself. Now, one of the people doing that, more than anybody I've ever seen in my lifetime, was Elon Levy. And you'll be happy to hear, if you didn't see the beginning of the show, that he was just suspended. And I'm not going to lie, I kind of did a little dance. No, I'm just kidding. I was very happy about it because this person is a terrible person. This guy is a monster. And I've proven to you repeatedly that he knows that he's lying, as most of them do, by the way, in the people we're discussing, Netanyahu's and the rest of the people we're talking about. But as I said, Elon Levy was just suspended after caught lying about food aid. And I'll show you what I mean by that. Just as we've been highlighting for months, will this change Israeli starvation tactics? I highly doubt it. This is likely done in hopes that we will stop pushing or to try to alleviate some kind of rift between the British government that have been pretty much pro-Zionist the entire time. But I include this, which I think I have up later that we'll go through. Just showing you that I've been breaking this down for a long time. This is just the 14th, but he was citing the lies all the way back then. We'll come back to it. The inclusion of Kogat and the whole thing as well. Here is the Times of Israel article. English language spokesman Elon Levy said suspended after angering the UK. It says prominent English language government spokesman Elon Levy has been suspended from his post after complaints from the UK government. London reportedly raised concerns with the foreign ministry after Levy responded to a March 8 post on Twitter by foreign ministry or UK foreign secretary David Cameron saying, quote, "We continue to urge Israel to allow more trucks into Gaza as the fastest way to get aid to those who need it." Very clear. It's not, and that is watered down. That's not saying you're starving people, but it's clearly, and this is my point about it, even their allies, if they step one toe out of line, they become an anti-Semite maniac. You're murdering, it's like they just go so far to the top because he says we need more aid. Well, everybody knows that. Instead of, there are people out there like us that are highlighting that there's not only not delivering it, they're blocking it, they're shooting people to try to get it. But here comes David Cameron that just says we're in need of more aid. And that's how they spun this out. So what does that show you about the desperation of the people on this side? That they're attacking even their own if they say a fraction out because they have nobody on their side. Levy reportedly responded to the post saying there were no problems with the capacity of aid trucks. That's my point. That's right there, the reality. He lied about that, and that's what caused this. So when you argue he got suspended for lying about food aid, that's what happened. It's exactly what happened. Following his tweet, now I'm not saying that's the why they chose to do it. Like, I argue it's probably not about that they're angry he lied about aid. I think it's about some kind of rift between them about controlling information. Either way, it came down to the fact that he said no, there's no problems with aid. And that's what spun it out. That's lying about food aid. He says, this is following his tweet, the British Foreign Office asked if the tweet seen as attacking Cameron was Israel's official position. And I'll show you a video this girl did that makes it really clear. Levy was sent suspended and has been at home for more than a week, says the report. Nothing that he was noting that he was unlikely to return. Hooray!
Hold on.
All right. Get to use that. Okay. News of his suspension comes on the same day that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, this is really funny to me, bemoaned the fact that Israel had a dearth of spokespeople who could, quote, string two words together in English. Now, of course, you could take that as meaning that they can't speak English. But I kind of take the sense that this we have to be honest. He's not good at this job. Elon Levy was embarrassing himself left and right, saying things that didn't add up, emotional responses. The guy was really bad at this job. I mean, there's worse. Karine KGP is terrible. It's not the same job, but the way he says that, I kind of take it as more than that. That they just he's getting frustrated that people around him are imbeciles. And I think that's probably obvious by now. But it says it also comes following reports earlier in the year that the Prime Minister's wife, Sarah Netanyahu, was reportedly seeking to have Levy fired over past criticism of the premier, as well as over his participation in protests against the judicial overhaul over the course of last year. So all these internal divisions is the point. We talked about this for so long. I mean, this whole thing is melting down. Netanyahu was so desperate to not go to prison long before October 7th because of the indictments. The judicial overhaul was intended to basically remove the possibility, take control over this in a way that would stop them, essentially turn this into even more of a theocratic state than it already is. Of course, as they level that accusation at Iran all the time, which is going the other direction, it's just hilarious how that works. But that even Levy was involved with protesting against that. And I just think it's hilarious. But it goes on to say, Levy, who entered the role in the wake of October 7th, attacks on Israel, working as a journalist as well as the advisor to President Herzog. Of course it was. The other guy has been lying about the most flimsy things ever. Chemical weapons instructions or instructions on how to rape. I mean, these really bad ones that he keeps getting caught for lying about. Anyway, the point, he lied about aid and got caught in a real public way. Oh, I had that twice, actually. So here, I posted this underneath. So here, this is just hilarious to me. So here's what he posted on March 17th. It seems to be one of the last things he posted. He says, you can search Google for answers about Israel, or you can listen to his podcast. It's flimsy and nobody likes it. It's not got no following and he's really bad at it. It's worse than this. I mean, you know that I don't like this guy, but objectively, the way he does these shows are horrible. I've never even bothered to try to break them down for you because it's really bad. But it says, and look, you could tell by the following that it's got 3,000, nobody's following it. With this much FaceTime, with that big of a following, you'd think there'd be a lot more. He probably didn't pay for them like he did with this one. But it says, you can search for answers about what's going on online, right? Or you can listen to me, get answers straight from the experts I'll be talking to. In other words, don't do your own research. Listen to what Israel says. Of course. And that's exactly our point today. And I said, oh, did someone get caught lying about food aid during a famine? I told you we all saw you. You will always be remembered as the Zionist monster who starved children to death. I hope you end up in prison. I couldn't resist. I had to. But here is a great clip. I'm not familiar with who this person is, but it came across me today and I thought it was, well, just funny and well done. And I like the fact that she's expressing the same thing I am, where she's like, I just can't believe how happy I'm about this today. Either way, I think it's interesting. And this gets into who responded. It's Alicia Kearns, member of parliament, and what that kind of caused. It's pretty brief. It's only about a minute, 2 minutes long.
You needed some positive news and perhaps like restore your faith in the power of social media. This man has been suspended from his job as spokesperson. It's perhaps indefinite, all because of a Tory MP, which I hate to say, but it's Alicia Kearns again. Taking to Twitter to spread his literal propaganda again, he basically said that the United Nations had asked that the crossing into Gaza was closed on a Saturday. And she responded being like, do you have evidence that they said that? And he's like, oh no, but this other unit, an aid facilitator, can like respond. And she's like, no, you said that the UN has requested this. I want you to evidence your claims. And then this like Israeli aid facilitator responds. He's like, again.
Wait, that's COGAT. And do you understand it? They don't just deal with aid. They're about just like engagement with Gaza. But my point has always been that in this process, as they're playing now, it's very specific about the coordination of humanitarian aid. So again, this group has been playing a role in this sort of like volley back and forth between Elon and COGAT, where they act like he says it and they back it up and they say it and he backs it up as if that confirms something. It's like their rape allegations. They just keep recycling the same things in a new article a week later, acting like it's new evidence. It's not. So COGAT, that's an important part of this. Elon's been suspended, but this needs to implicate this ridiculous group that is literally pretending to facilitate aid while lying about doing so. Again, terrorists murder people. It's quite a bit worse when you are also murdering people, but pretend you're helping them and ask praise for it. And they're involved in that. To realize they played a role in this.
I want facilitator can like respond. And she's like, no, you said that the UN has requested this. I want you to evidence your claims. And then this like Israeli aid facilitator responds. And she's like, again, no, you said the United Nations requested it. This is the opposite of what I've been told as the UK government.
Austin.
Like, Foreign Office person, Egyptian government hasn't told me that, neither has United Nations. They're clear that it was the Israeli government that requested no delivery on Saturdays. And this is amongst like mass famine, mass starvation. They've basically said we're not doing any food deliveries on a Saturday. And when he doesn't respond...
Just so it's clear, because she speaks as fast as I do, it sounds like, is what she's saying, in case you missed it, is that they're caught. So as usual, Elon Levy throws it to whoever. So the UN requested that. And a member of parliament from Britain goes, that... How do you prove that? Where's that coming from? And he points to COGAT and they kind of reiterate the point. She goes, no, you said UN said that. Where's the evidence of that? And it all comes out to the fact that it's actually Israel's choice because they don't want to do it while people are starving to death on just Saturday. We just don't want to deliver aid for X, Y, and reason. It doesn't even matter what your justification is. People are starving to death every moment of every day at this point. I don't mean actually. Right now, I think there's what we can prove. I think it's upwards of, 25 plus people that have starved to death. children. But my point is, they're in the process of starving to death every moment of the day right now. That's why the level five we just discussed. And every moment right now they don't get food in that day means more people are potentially dying. And they're going, yeah, we just, not only just, we're not going to do it because we choose to maintain starvation tactics, but then trying to pretend like it's the choice made by somebody else. And for whatever reason, this person decides to call it out and causes this whole series of events. And her point is right. I don't believe this person cares. Maybe they do. We should consider that. But it's really about the fact that this is what every one of them could do if they just cared or had another motivation to do it like she does. Any one of these politicians, if Rubio cared to not be a complete sociopath and actually go, hey, they are killing people, maybe we could see change if Biden or Trump or any of them did the same. But none of them, every single one of these so-called leaders in the world, other than people in Yemen, are absent. Yeah, they may stand up here and there and say, well, man, we need more aid. But just like Arnaud Bertrand pointed out, nobody's accused them of being a war criminal. Nobody has publicly actually leveled those charges at him. And yet, it's provable in every possible way. My point is that we need more of that. Anybody out there that has influence, you could change the conversation. You could literally save human lives if you actually find the courage to push back.
Mass famine, mass starvation. They've basically said we're not doing any food deliveries on a Saturday. And when he doesn't respond, she says, still waiting on evidence. This is obviously saying that this was in part due to the fact that he said that David Cameron was wrong for appealing for more trucks to enter Gaza. But this says everything about the power that politicians have if they actually tried to do anything with it. She's continuously tweeted out being like, we need more aid, blah, blah, blah. This isn't acceptable of this shit. And like, no one's calling her anti-Semitic. No one's saying that she hates Israel. And the fact that her questioning of his bullshit got him literally suspended from his job brings me so much joy because he's like a terrible human being.
But I agree. But her point really quickly, though, why isn't she being called racist? Right? Why isn't she being called anti-Israel? Now, I agree. I don't think she is. But it's interesting, though, isn't it? What's the different little caveat right there? What's going on in this conversation that kind of omits her from that criticism? Something is going on, guys. I think that's very interesting. I don't know. Maybe the conversation's finally shifting because they're being so obviously caught. I hope so. But either way, I think that's a powerful moment.
It just all begs the question, would we ever see the Labour Party questioning Israel like this? And that genuinely scares me. Like, that genuinely makes me so upset. Not that I necessarily have any faith in the Labour Party, but the fact that the Tories are the best we've got is a horrifying thought.
Yeah, you know, see, it's not that different from an American perspective. You know, it's all a game. It's not a two-party illusion, but it's all the same game, right? They're all the same entities kind of lobbying back and forth, maintaining power over you under the guise that they're somehow different. It's the same thing. And plenty of people in the UK will tell you that. I mean, I'm much more invested and aware of the dynamics of the US system, but as I understand it, the overlaps are very obvious. Now, here is the kind of thread that I put out about this over the 14th and so on, just to show you the lies. I'll include him again. And going forward, now that he's been suspended, just so quickly rehash the facts that are very clearly on the table. He's been allowing this. And I hope this person literally is held accountable for allowing, not just allowing, but for maintaining a genocide, a starvation tactic. Now, as I said here, he posted this on the 14th. Same thing. The problem isn't getting aid into Gaza, it's getting it around. Lies. Everybody from every angle is now calling him out for that. And here's Kogat saying the same thing. They're just as culpable. They're just as complicit. And I said, it's the same lie he repeats every day, among many others, pointing to completely illegitimate Kogat group who's already been caught lying about aid during a famine. And the point is, they're claiming Hamas is taking all the aid. Well, pretty much everybody's spoken up and said that we can't prove that. They have not given any evidence for that claim. Then I said, of course, they're assuming the Israeli government is letting aid through at all. They're blocking life-saving aid, right? So the aid's not coming through. But they're the aid that is coming up to the areas, they're blocking, right? So Hamas isn't taking it. If it's even coming up to the areas, they're not letting it through in general, as everybody's calling out. And then on top of that, if any does actually go through, they're shooting at people who try to get it. Everybody. And I don't say that lightly, guys. Even the United States, at some level, has begun to call this out. They're shooting at the aid convoys going back to the very beginning. And then, of course, there's an important one. They've been doing a great work at October 7 fact check. They did a whole breakdown of Kogat. We already went through it, proving that they're false. They're a propaganda outlet that is lying, and I'll show you an example next. And I mean, it breaks it down, guys. They're caught in real time about, and this is one of the ones we already went over right here. The bread example, right? Where Kogat was sharing it. I have it up in a second. They pretended, here are all these bakeries, all the bread. And at that point, even Twitter called it out and said, nope, that was destroyed in October. A group literally, its primary job right now is facilitating humanitarian aid for Gaza, and they're lying about bringing aid in for Gaza. It's pretty disgusting. Well, here was Elon Levy, going back to the original liar in the conversation today, sharing that same clip from Kogat, right? Showing you the same image. Oh, look at all the breads. Saying there's 20 operational bakeries in Gaza. Now he's showing the same video, right? The same one that Oren Barksi was sharing, also sharing from Kogat. And the point was, nope, the video's old. Bakery was bombed by Israel October 2023. Now, alternatively, ask yourself why that didn't happen for Elon's tweet. There's plenty of people down below tagging community. I wonder why. I think you know why. Now, interestingly enough, I had some, well, it doesn't even matter. I feel like there's already suppression going on with his account because of what's going on, but that's different. I can't prove it. My point is that that's not fact-checked, even though it's a lie. It's the same, literally the same video, right? Kogat doing the same thing. Same video. And of course, they put the fake date on there. That's they're trying to push the lie even further. Same one, Kogat, February 9th. The place was destroyed. And here is just the images, in case you want to see it. Here's the actual bakery their claim was being done in. That was destroyed in October. And in fact, the entire Al-Nusra refugee camp was completely bombed out. And here's just the idea about the, you know, there's not 20 bakeries. I don't even think there was 20 beforehand. The point is that right now there's none, as Guardian even talked about 4 months ago. Catastrophic food shortages. And again, here's Kogat pretending, here's Nusra. Everyone's happy and fed and everything's great. And as I said, just to show you, this is Kogat, right? Facilitating humanitarian aid, right? Well, they say right by the office of the director of Al-Shifa Hospital, a designated room for Hamas terrorists to operate from and weapons and terror group and blah, blah, blah. Well, all you see is an office, and they show you, oh, that's where we are. There's the office. And they say it's in the right by the office of the director. And they walk all the way over here, a couple rooms away, and they walk in this room outside and back in and right by, right? And then they go, look, see, it's just some stuff on a table. Yeah, sure, maybe that's the truth. But they've already been exposed countless times for just lining stuff up on a table in any room they find. And you can prove that these have been caught. BBC called them out for crying out loud, for moving things around in between different people or adding things for the new scene or literally being caught bringing boxes in of stuff they later set out. We caught them for that. A lot of us did. But that's your evidence. Now, here's the main point, though. Why in the world is a group allegedly focused on humanitarian aid, even posting content like this? Well, I think it's quite obvious, isn't it? Because they're just another arm of the Zionist propaganda machine. They've been caught lying blatantly about delivering aid numerous times. Here they are going, Hamas terror tunnels in the Shifa Hospital. Okay, thanks, humanitarian aid distributor. That makes a lot of sense. But here is the foreign affairs minister saying Israel allows extensive humanitarian aid into Gaza by land, air, and sea for anyone willing to help, despite Hamas violently disrupting aid convoy. Same thing. This was on the 18th. Violently disrupting aid, UNRWA collaborating with them. No, it's the same story. Canadian officials spoke up. You still haven't seen any intelligence that they're working, that the UN agency is working with Hamas. Israel yet to provide evidence they're working or they're involved October 7th. Or the one we just showed you a second ago, the reality that no, the Hamas is not blocking the aid, according to literally everybody other than Israel. But he just says if it's time for UN minister to stop attacking Israel and recognize our right to self-defense. Why? Because he said starving people? You are, and everybody knows that. But this is the desperate efforts they're seeing. And again, here's Elon Levy saying, of course, UNRWA denies any involvement with Hamas because it's covering for... No. I mean, anything's possible. But if they were so sure of that, they would have evidence to present. They haven't. They have conjecture and forceful narratives, and they yell at you for not saying the same thing as if you hate Jewish people. And then here's Daniel Amodas pointing out that despite the fact that even the United States has said there's no evidence yet to been presented about Hamas and October 7th or taking aid... Or specifically about all three, taking aid, Hamas involved, or UNRWA being part of it. According to Reuters, quoting various sources, a deal has been reached between the United States congressional leaders and the White House regarding a significant bill funding military, State Department, and various other government programs. And guess what? This agreement extends the ban on UNRWA until March of 2025. Yeah, they really care about starvation, don't they? Clearly. I just say it's incredible. All this is are elements, and by the way, that's both left and right, despite all of their screaming narratives, to make sure that they continue starving Palestinian people. And as I showed you here at Sky News, Benjamin Netanyahu says that Israel was making unusual efforts to deliver and increase humanitarian aid to Gaza by land, air, and sea. Same claims as always. His army has done more to minimize civilian casualties than any other army in modern times. Who cares about the facts and the data and the metrics? Who cares? Right? Here's how we can show and prove that more people have been killed in a smaller time frame and as many bombs have been killed. I mean, every way you spin it, than any other war. More children than in 4 years of continual conflict combined around the world. But somehow that translates into the most actions ever. I said, what is this if not desperation? Borderline delusion. There isn't a person alive with eyes who can't see how transparently false these statements are. And Ilan Levy, of course, same thing, says Israel has denied obstructing the entry of humanitarian aid into the Gaza Strip. Oh, here's March 19th. Yesterday, he says, on the 18th, he's referencing, Israeli government spokesman Ilan Levy, and he's quoting this article, insisted to social media that there is no limit to, one, the amount of aid that can enter, and two, the lies people will tell to deny this. That's it. Now, you realize if you look at it, all it is a live feed, and that's just the Guardian citing what he said. But this is how this is played. He wants people who read this to go, oh, the Guardian, so he's right. They're proving what he said. All they're doing is citing that you said that. And all you're doing is going, see, Guardian said I said that. That's how bad he is at this job. And Freddie Pontone points out the same thing we've been highlighting as well. People will trust Oxfam's report more than your constant lies. You are not applying ICJ provisional measures to avoid genocide, and the siege on Gaza is already genocide. The world sees you for what you truly are and is slowly distancing itself from your extremism and war crimes. Oxfam spoke up on the 17th. Israel government continues to block aid despite the ruling. That's just wild. This keeps happening. Now, here was a clip from, it's really just kind of a breakdown with words, showing some images in the background and stuff. It just says, from Omar Shakir, Oxfam America and Human Rights Watch submit a memo to the U.S. government showing how Israel is using U.S. weapons and blocking aid in direct violation of international law and U.S. law. Israel's assurances to respect the law aren't credible. Well, shocking. Exactly like we talked about. The U.S. should suspend its military aid. Well, the U.S. shouldn't be a kindergartner and pretend that they signed some piece of paper that says they wouldn't do it, but that it means they wouldn't do it. We can prove they've already been doing it. But the point in here is that everybody sees it. Human Rights Watch, Oxfam, United Nations, all their allies calling it out. Brian Funicane points out the same thing. And here's an article from Just Security, so you can prove it for yourself. If you want the actual details. It shouldn't be hard to recognize this. Section 210, I think it's actually 220I, it looks like an I, of the U.S. Foreign Assistance Act bars military aid to states who restrict U.S. humanitarian assistance. We've already talked about this. With children starving in Gaza, it is past time for the Biden administration to apply, the law. He's right. There is no way you sidestep this reality. Even the United States openly now states that they're at least in some way suppressing aid. So that means they're in violation of their own laws, but they're also funding the Azov movement in violation of their own laws. So nobody cares. We care, but they don't care. So unless we care enough to do something, they just will keep on not caring. But Ilan Levy also said on the 19th, since Hamas death squads invaded Israel on 10/7, burned whole families, lie upon lie, committed barbaric gang rape, just lie after lie. I mean, this is why it's so crazy. And this is probably why he's being suspended. I mean, the guy is just clumsily pushing out things that at the very least, you can lean into all allegations. If you were trying to be a propagandist about sexual abuse, there's plenty of ways where you could make an argument that would be hard to dismiss, as opposed to going barbaric, massive, all day long gang rape. And just like, well, that's stupid because there's no evidence. And people have come back from Gaza or who were there on October 7th, who said that didn't happen, who said that they were treated kindly. I mean, it's just pathetic. Burned whole families alive was one of the earliest ones shown. I point out to Chuck Costello sharing that dumpster full of burned bodies. Remember, he tried to claim it was a bunch of beheaded children because somebody clearly told him to say that, I would argue. And then he deleted it. And Robert was one of the first people I know of who found out that was a bunch of Hamas members, which was later confirmed like 2 months later when they admitted they rolled the number back to like 1,100 because they bombed houses full of their people and Hamas and then just counted all the bodies. But according to Elon, Kogat, by the way, is who's citing this. So Kogat's lying and he goes, see, the thing Kogat said is like I told you, and then adds a bunch of lies to it. I simply added that you clumsily shoehorn in these proven lies, and I cite the Haaretz article that proves their lies, on every post. But the point is, he doesn't need to claim all those things to cite that they're his lie about human aid, right? But he goes, gang rape and burn families and this and that and everything, and then here's aid they're not doing. It doesn't even make sense. It's completely disjointed. And I said, the fact that you have to shoehorn those in every post only makes it all the more clear you are desperately pushing lies and that you know we don't believe you. Kogat has been repeatedly caught lying. Hey, just like you. And we showed you the Kogat breakdown. I hope you check it out. But guess what? October 7th Fact Check also did a breakdown of him. Yet another false statement from Elon Levy. He cites the one that we were talking. Oh, actually, an earlier one from March 3rd, saying he has been lying about aid for months now. When he made the statement on December 10th, there were barely 100 trucks per day. Remember, before that, it was 500 humanitarian aid trucks a day, and they were already food insecure. But they go down, just like we've been doing, and highlight how we can prove that they're lying. Israel is deliberately starving Palestinians, says the UN experts. And this is the one, the Defense Department guy that resigned in protest, who told you that they're raping people, that they're killing civilians. He was very public about it. But he's suspended because he's a liar. And it's very easy to prove. And that this suddenly becomes more relevant again. He said this on the 8th. Remember, we talked about it then. He said, Hamas lies because it knows it has a global audience that wants to believe Israel is evil. And there are zero international accountability mechanisms. Prove me wrong. Interesting. Well, I said, your point about lies is perfectly describing Israel authority, according to just about everyone. But you underestimate us. Quote, zero international accountability mechanisms is actually correct. Your very existence proves that. Who needs enemies when you have advocates like Elon Levy? Well, it's funny how he says Hamas lies to you because, well, turns out it was the reverse. And he lies to you because he thought you were gullible. Some of you, maybe, but we're all beginning to see through it. Oh, and then I guess I had that there to include that again so you can check out his fact check. Here was the person I was referencing earlier, James Elder from UNICEF. Just, again, pointing out the reality. And this is in regard to the actual official account of Israel doing the same thing. And by the way, they know this isn't true. They know it. Look at that. Scenes from the Nusrat, Central Gaza, March 18th. Again, guys, I can go through it all again. The area they're showing has been destroyed. The market, the bakery's been gone. They've already been caught lying about each angle of it. Well, here is the reality. As he says, Israel is blocking food, aid, and medicine. One photo doesn't change what's happening, even if you want to argue it's real. The evidence we have shows the entire area has been destroyed. Here's what he wants you to understand, regardless of what lies they spin.
Heading back into Gaza now. Outrageous how many life-saving supplies are so desperately close to those who need them. Food, water, medicines, life-saving supplies, because we know just across there in the border, children have died of malnutrition. Children have died of dehydration. These are the supplies that so urgently need to get across into the civilians of Gaza. And the most efficient way, the only way we are going to save the lives of the numbers of children who are so desperately in need is by these roads.
And don't forget, they've also destroyed most of the roads, so they can't. Right. And in fact, you know, a lot of the crossings that they won't open, a lot of them are because they've destroyed the access points on the inside, but they don't want to admit that. And they just keep these things close, the different roads, so they can't even move. So that best they have to use. I mean, even the donkey carts will have a hard time getting over these the way that basically I showed you the image of that truck that drives down the middle of the road and has like a hook that like tears up the center of the road. There's no reason you do that other than destroy the road to make it impassable. These are war crimes, every single thing, every angle of it. And here's just another response to this. So here they are going, look at the market. It's, you know, as if we're not hurting anybody. Well, the argument was already made. This was the same thing done by Nazi Germany when they were killing Jewish people. They put out propaganda videos. They look at the market. Look at they're not starving. Everyone's eating fine. And they were lying. Same thing. Here's a Warsaw ghetto Nazi occupied poll in 1941. Look at the market. So the same point, right? If you're trying to show this to pretend to insinuate there's not a problem, well, there you go. See, isn't that evidence that Nazis didn't do anything there? Clearly not. It's the same point, and they're doing the same thing. And day by day, they continue to show the overlap. Now, on that note about the lies in regard to the numbers, I'll include this yet again. Again, as I pointed in the beginning, Telegraph seems to be just kind of desperately towing these lines lately. It says, this could be the devastating proof that Hamas is faking its death figures. Oh, could it be? So I guess we can automatically assume that it's not proof if it could be devastating proof. My point is, it's citing the same person. There's the same. This is how this operates, and we've seen this pretty consistently. Like with the rape allegations, this guy has been tossed around. The Table Mag article, the claim is the same. He does not feel that the numbers and the consistency suggest that it's accurate. That means, therefore, they must be lying. Now, it's more than that, but it still comes back to his opinion based on the fact that he argues that there's not, it's too consistent, essentially. Well, that's no different than the one they put up. That's no different than the tweet that went out. Now, it's the Telegraph just rewriting the same point, and then the Telegraph article, the tweet, and the U.S. and the Israeli state, they all get shoved together as 3 points proving it. No, it's the same guy making the same claim, rehashed 3 different times. And what is it? It's not proof. It is a subjective opinion that could be the reality. But guess what? As we keep showing you. Oh, actually, well, here's the fact check. Again, they're doing good work. October 7th fact check broke down the guy's claims. And here, that's the Table Mag article that they keep citing. And again, it's opinion. Doesn't mean it's fake or false, but it's definitely opinion. And people keep citing that as the proof that the numbers are fake. And it's not the same thing. And I'll show you the evidence that we should be considering more than one professor who argues that the consistency means that it's not possible. He says gross statistical errors committed by this professor they're citing, Professor Abraham Weiner, is in this Table Mag article, which was then rehashed in tweets, rehashed by Times of Israel, rehashed by Telegraph. Same point. Led a London School of Economics professor to call it, quote, one of the worst abuses in statistics I've ever seen. Everybody's been attacking this because the same thing we saw during COVID-19. You got people that are morally pliable, morally ambiguous, that are willing to toe lines for whatever reason. And they lied about stats around COVID. They lied about death numbers on the injections. They're lying about the Zionist propaganda. And you can read through it. He says his flimsy argument is based on a statistical analysis where Werner cherry picks a limited data set to prove his point. Same old, right? The reality is the numbers you're seeing are very clearly accurate based on 1,000 different angles. I'll go over some of them in a second. And just because they've been, again, cherry picking angles to make it look more organized than what it really was. But even then, the increasing bombardment and kettling people into a smaller and smaller area pretty much adds up, and bombing those smaller areas. But the real point ultimately comes back to, let's just pretend like we don't even know for sure, that we don't know. Well, if you've got a professor who is not there telling you based on numbers he sees on a piece of paper or the screen that he knows X, Y, and Z versus, I don't know, the Israeli intelligence who says they deemed the Hamas numbers accurate, or how about the army separately, alternatively, saying they checked and found the reports of the dead in the Ministry of Health in Gaza are reliable. So we got reliable and accurate. The Israeli intelligence and the Israeli army telling you, guess what? They're accurate. Here's Times of Israel. IDF believes the overall Gaza death toll claimed by Hamas is fairly accurate and that more civilians have been killed than Hamas operatives. Shocking. I just think it's crazy. This is Richard Kemp citing the same thing. This article, by the way, is the same thing. It's another article from another platform pointing at the same statistical analysis that's an opinion. I said, except for the fact that the Israeli military and the UN and a Lancet paper reviewed study or peer-reviewed study already admitted the numbers are accurate, which, by the way, here's that article, here's that study, which is just a study. Take it for what you will. These kind of things to me can always be manipulated. But all of it together with the army, the military, the intelligence saying that they're accurate, and then the Lancet saying there's no evidence of inflated mortality reports from the Gaza Ministry. All that is eclipsed by one guy with an opinion, only if you're a Zionist follower. And here's Joe Catron. Here's, of course, Eviva Klumpis, all these same people, just towing the same lines. saying, in a surprise to nobody, Hamas casualty numbers are statistically impossible. Oh, are they? Or did that guy that you're citing say he thinks that's likely the case? See, these people are dishonest at a core value, guys. It says, according to a University of Pennsylvania statistician who had analyzed the death figures put out by the terror group. I just read you. It's exactly what you're citing. It says the first hint that they may be inflated was that they came from a terror group. It's just desperate. And here's Joe coming in to say, well, every serious analyst knows that the Ministry of Health numbers are, in fact, low. Additionally, the only terror group in occupied Palestine is the Zionist so-called State of Israel. But the point is, here's Time Magazine from March 15th. The science is clear. Over 30,000 people have died. Now, you can argue whatever you want about this, the makeup of those numbers. What they're saying is you can clearly prove that this many people have died. And then you got the military saying, yes, they're accurate. You got the intelligence saying, yes, it's accurate. You got a Lancet study saying, yes, it's accurate. You got the UN saying, yes, it's accurate. And yet we all get pushed over to look at this one guy's statement. Doesn't this feel ridiculous? And guys, as always, this is why we get censored, because it's that easy to point these things out when you do it the right way. And last point on this segment, here's Mr. Little Mikey Rappaport. He says, ask again. Can you provide detailed documentation and proof of 30,000 alleged victims in Gaza? Men, women, children, terrorists, maybe some birth certificates, a little bit more detail, social security numbers. Obviously, you get the game he's trying to play, but it's almost as if they don't recognize how bad this is. You see, there's a couple things he's trying to do. Clearly, around any of the allegations, more specifically the rape allegations, what people who are honest with a soul and a conscience have been doing are that, you know, we need to prove serious, especially serious claims like that. Not just using innuendo and double speak and IDF says one person said, or that 5 months later we have not a single person who's actually come forward, but let's keep believing the Israeli military. You know, stuff like that. Or 76 sperms found in one girl. Oops, wait a no, that was a false story. Keep looking forward. And then a new lady comes up from the UN that says, All we did was rehash the evidence they gave us, and we didn't prove any of it because it's not a real investigation. And they go, we proved it all. Okay, all that aside, it's obviously logical to say we can consider this happened. Excuse me, one second. Something caught my throat. It's obvious that you can say that this could have happened. I've said that. Based on the evidence we have, that's not proof, but evidence, data points, it's certainly possible. But we can't prove it. So by asking for more evidence, he acts like it's unjustified. How dare you not blindly believe what we say? Or about any number of these things they keep lying about. Alternatively, is anybody debating that people are dying in Gaza? Is anybody confused about the fact that there are people buried under rubble that we can't actually verify, and that all they're doing is taking the minimal estimate based on the fact that we know there is more? That means we wouldn't know exact estimates of who and how and what. Yes, even the Israeli military has admitted that. But Mr. Mikey Rappaport can't not be part of the agenda. He has to lie for, you know, probably because he's being paid. I think we just proved that with the first acts of going to Israel and coming back. But whether that's going forward or not, you can decide for yourself. But isn't that insulting that this is what a grown-up is doing today? A grown man who can see, like everybody else, that children are literally starving to death, and we prove based on science and the IDF that these numbers are accurate? As I said down here somewhere, I said, are you saying the IDF is lying? Of course he didn't respond, because you can't point that contradiction out. But because we don't have the social security numbers, it'll almost be fake, right? Okay, fine, let's play the same game. As soon as you give me the social security numbers, right, birth certificate, every exact detail of every rape victim, then we're going to pretend it's false. So, okay, Mike, is that okay with you? People are just pathetically ridiculous, man. I tell you, it's hard to not to, I mean, even like that, even Mikey and stuff like that, you know, I shouldn't do that. It's become so bottom of the barrel, lowest common denominator. Something in me just wants to belittle it, but I shouldn't, right? I shouldn't. I should be better than that. But here are a couple more of the lies that Elon Levy threw out. And again, this is before, right? So this is 2 days ago. Knowing now that he was suspended for lying, we should make sure we understand what else he could be lying about. And here he goes, I'm going to be blunt, he says, because I'm at my wit's end with hostages still trapped in Hamas terror dungeons. Or, you know, in the apartments and houses that you bomb because you gassed all the tunnels and flooded the tunnels. Or that they're not terror dungeons, they're just simply tunnels, that most of which Israel had a hand in building. But he goes on to say, we know Hamas is raping hostages. So that went far. We're alleging rape in general on the day that that happened on October 7th. They still haven't proven that most everyone is now shown to be false. To then the claim that even Matt Miller floated too early, I guess, and he got pushed back because you couldn't know for sure. And then everybody else that's come back has now said that they were treated kindly, but you're now just going to go right to their raping hostages. It's as stupid as saying they raped dead bodies. There's no one's even claiming that. These are just day by day claims that push the envelope to outrage one more person to get a little bit more support. It's just pathetic. How could you possibly know that a hostage was raped, seeing as though everyone's come home and said that didn't happen? Are you psychic? Do you have intelligence you're not telling us? I mean, look at where he goes with this. We know Hamas is raping hostages. How could you? He doesn't, obviously. And he's even admitted that in earlier conversations. There's no way they could know. That's basic. But then says, if they're pregnant, it's week 23. Isn't that just disgusting? I'm really glad this person is suspended. He's probably going to get his job back as soon as they feel like it's not uncomfortable enough, unless they recognize how really bad he is at this, which maybe they do. But think about how grotesque that is. So one, you're making an allegation you know you can't prove. And then from that, making people think about how she was raped and then got pregnant. And based on what? And here's Israel doing the same thing. Now here is Corrine. Oh, I thought it was Corrine, different account, saying Julia Kasim explains how baseless allegations of Hamas raping of Israeli settlers spread without any evidence to support the claims. Now, this is a 1 minute 45. They go over the bottom line that there is no evidence. And on top of that, we also have it's right here, I think. Plenty of evidence coming from the very people they're pointing to. Right here with the Intercept article. They're pointing at this area saying that these are people that are saying that they were raped, but they're just too afraid to come forward. That place spoke up and said that we weren't abused. What are you talking about? He said, it's not true, said the kibbutz spokesperson. It says three victims specifically singled out. So individuals by the New York Times in their marquee expose published in November alleging Hamas had deliberately sexual violence, which turned out to be a big, this whole story imploded. It exploded in their face. It says, we're not in fact victims of assault, even according to their spokesperson who spoke with the Times in regard to this story. I mean, that's so incredible. But here he is on the 18th, just saying it again, just for no reason. Just saying, you know what? I'm going to go lie about rape on Twitter. He goes, they rape minors and corpses, and then called it resistance. I don't even know how to begin to frame how dumb this is. So the resistance allegation was a sticker somebody put up, clearly not done by Palestinian supporters. Nobody in any argument of this is saying that babies are occupiers or that rape is resistance. That is what Zionists is saying they wink, wink, actually think. Then we get stickers that come out. It's these clumsy false flag efforts. Raped minors and corpses and called it resistance. See, if atrocity propaganda doesn't work, if you come out and say they killed babies and get caught lying, well, what do? Well, you got to go further. How long until it becomes I don't even know how to make that crazier. How long until it becomes something even more ridiculous? They raped the dogs inside the house after they raped the pill. And just whatever crazy thing you need to say to people go, what? They burned whole families alive. All these have been proven to not have happened. They took you for a ride and you keep falling for it. Well, we now know that you've been lying and you got suspended and you're the one taking people for rides. But I'll include this as well. This is just that thread that I had from before. Breaking down the reality that they used an image from 2022 claiming it was proof of rape that they later removed from a website that the Israeli government 100% endorsed. And here is Levy. Her name was Kokov Ellie, or what is it? I forget how to say her name. Kokov Elkalam Levy. I just say Levy's. That's pretty common, I guess. But as Max pointed out, and plenty of us called out, she is presenting the image on her display of an image of what we know. This image that we know for a fact is from 2022. And I've shown you many times. In fact, I have it posted right down here. It is on Twitter from 2022 on the Wayback Machine. And it's a disgusting picture. And the point is, it's not from October 7th. And yet here is the woman presenting for the investigative committee into Rape for 10/7, that image we can prove is not from that time. And they keep pointing it out. And you guys know this, you remember. Now let's go talk about what just happened in Jenin. Right, so all these lies, lies about rape allegations, lies about starvation, lies about everything. I'm really hoping that somebody who might have been on the fence is truly beginning to recognize that you should not be taking anything they're saying at face value. The smallest detail, which, by the way, question everything. It should always be that case, but especially people that are proven liars. So Halil Falood is one of these people that is also pretty rapidly towing every line that comes out. Proud Zionist. Says, you know, anybody who is openly Zionist should be embarrassed right now because that is an openly racist ideology. But it says three Hamas monsters are no more. And a fourth in a critical condition. Right. So just for sake of conversation, what if these are all civilians? Seeing as how I can prove to you that they are, he's just saying whatever comes around. And we have already proven that they've killed their own people, killed lots of people on 10/7, killed people that have been held, taken hostage, and just a lot of Israelis in between. And Palestinians, obviously. My point would be that if they just kill average Palestinians and call them Hamas, and they've been caught for doing that, think of that. Consider what's actually happening. And this person says, proof they were Hamas? Wasn't it funny that the same thing that Michael Rappaport was just saying? Like, prove it. How do you know? Well, you guys continue to recycle these things and just cite what they tell you to say when anybody, whether you support any side, should be going, well, let's prove these things. But you don't. You get just an image. Well, let's go over some of the things we know and see what we can look at. Here's the images we see. This is the moment an Israeli airstrike targeted the vehicle in Jenin, which, by the way, if you missed it, is in the West Bank. It's an airstrike in the West Bank. By the way, it's not very new, but just realize the whole spun up narrative about Gaza, Hamas, and 10/7. It's about Palestine. And they're just really beginning to show you that. But they bombed the car. And I'll show you a better image of it over here, which shows you very clearly that they didn't care about anybody else that was around. So here's what they released. This is the Israeli government released image. Now take note of the fact there are cars next to them and there are people along the roads. This car right next to it, you tell me that does not destroy or potentially kill whoever's in the other car. But it doesn't matter is the point. All the things that usually at least they pretend that they're supposed to be adhering to, which means they never do. The U.S. government never does either. But at least they outwardly pretend they care about these things. It doesn't matter right now. All they say is Hamas and all these cowardly U.S. politicians back away. Doesn't it matter that those are civilians in the other car? What if it was an Israeli? It's a West Bank. Isn't that possible? They don't care, guys. That's the point. Crazy. Now here, as you know, is the simple reality. And we've gone over this extensively. I don't even need to grab the article that we covered. Read this article. A mass assassination factory inside Israel's calculated bombing of Gaza. And in this, they talk about what they're doing, which is using artificial intelligence called Habsora, means the gospel. And in this article, I think it's six IDF members, some of them former, are speaking on the record about how they're using the AI to pick targets and just bombing things and the intention is based on speed. And they get graded by that. So if they're slower, which basically the whole thing motivates them to not concern themselves with the fallout. And in this, they say we're just bombing buildings to bomb buildings. They admit that they are murdering civilians for sport. But let's ignore all the facts and just go with whatever Elon Levy says or whatever Matt Miller says that day, right? The point is, we already know this. It's been proven already that they're just executing anybody who they just decide to that day, or maybe there's some flimsy connection. And that doesn't mean they're Hamas, by the way. And in any case, these things should need to be proven or verified. But it's no different than the U.S. government killing civilians and saying that they're combatants. It's the same thing. But all of it is a criminal act. So here's the first article from the 20th today, earlier, saying surveillance video shows IDF strike in Jenin, West Bank. Palestinian Authority Health Ministry says three people are killed in a drone strike in Jenin. Targeted a group of what they said were terror operatives. Just refreshed on me right there. That happens so often on these platforms. The trio are named in social media posts. So let's make sure we look into this, which I'll probably see if Robert wants to look further and see in regard to who these people are, what their connections may be. images show them, and this is the only thing, this is my point, images show them that were put up afterward with firearms, indicating their affiliation with terror groups. So because they have a gun, that makes them terrorists? Do you realize they're living in a place that's occupied and they're constantly threatened? Their lives are threatened. They're bombed. They're starved to death. Think about how ridiculous it is to argue that anybody, they literally have a gun. So every American has a gun's a terrorist? Like, oh, does it only exist in an area where you think people are, you know, because they're brown. So we all, there are guns, they have terrorists. Of course it could mean that. And of course, even somebody who has aligned themselves with a resistance group, it does not mean they're always a target to be murdered because you simply argue they're part of what you claim is a terror group, which, by the way, even if you want to claim that, was the group that was funded by Israel. So, I mean, this whole thing is so ridiculously backward. But all it ultimately means is, look, there's an image of a gun with a kid with a gun, so we got to murder him. And by the way, it was the two of them. I mean, what are they, 17, 16? How much you want to bet they watched their families get murdered and they got called terrorists? How much you want to bet they've been living meal to meal? Just think about how much they've had to deal with their entire lives. And this is how they get, I mean, what do you think it's going to do now? What do you think it's going to do to their friends? They are literally manufacturing the thing that they then use to keep their power over the people they're talking about. Surveillance camera footage circulated online showing the moment of the strike. Now here's the update saying Hamas commander killed an IDF strike on Rafah. Oh, I'm sorry. This is the wrong one. Wait a minute. Hold on. Now, see, I don't know. This is a new browser. I don't know how to refresh. I'm pretty sure that changed forward because this wasn't even about the same thing. It had a different title. Oh, well, I'm not going to try to go back. See, I got to figure out how to work this browser. There's certain things that I've, like when I first started, by the way, I almost lost a bunch of stuff because I didn't know how to organize this thing. I think I already told you that. I thought I almost lost all those. But in any case, mine is that one. And there was another article. Maybe I grabbed the wrong one. By the way, let me just refresh this. It probably updated itself. Not yet. In any case, there's lots of other articles about it. There was one more that went further past the original discussion and simply just highlighted the fact that it's even past that when they researched it more, there's little evidence to suggest past that image that they're anything they claim they are. And they're in the West Bank, by the way. And on top of that, this is Sir Chili Bean, later in the night, on the 20th, the moment when gunfire and gas bombs were fired at their funeral procession in Jenin, or a funeral procession, resulting in clashes erupting with Palestinian security forces. And my point about this is how frustrating it is that this is not a new situation. You're literally trying to, it's a funeral procession. And you can see them hitting them with their batons, firing guns at them. This is what they deal with. That's hatred, guys. That's hatred. Hatred and impunity. Knowing that you can do that and laugh as they run and think they're going to get shot. That's impunity. And let's not forget, it's exactly what happened with this American citizen that was shot by Israel as the U.S. government tried to cover it up. Her name was Shireen Abu Akleh. American citizen that nobody cared about in the U.S. because they don't care about anything if it goes against their agenda. But these people were trying to carry her funeral or her casket for the funeral procession, and they literally walked up and started beating people in the legs. It was the most public thing in the world. Why? Because they hate these people, and because you can't have them, you can't respect her because we killed her. You think I'm wrong? Look into it. Read the article. It's as plain as day, and even the investigation itself from other platforms broke down the reality of what happened. The story changed. No, we didn't shoot her. Oh, we did, except she shot us first. Oh, no, it was somebody else shot at us. Or no, it was a ricochet from somebody else. No, it turned out it was our ricochet. I mean, literally, like four times in a row. Read the article. Robert breaks it down. It's just hatred. And on top of all of that, as we're being told that they bombed these cars because they were terrorists, let's not forget, we just went through this with Hananya Naftali telling you that they killed these two kids because they carried an RPG and they literally altered the image to make it look like it was an RPG. Literally painted the things on either side of it. You can see it for the podcast. Made it look like there was handles on one side on the other to make it look like an RPG or whatever that would be. When those aren't there, if you look close enough, zoom in even further. That's not there. You know why? Because it was later proven to be a bike. Now, of course, when Euromed Human Rights Group EuroMed Human Rights Group broke it down and proved it was just a bike. They got called Hamas supporters and racist and anti-Semites. Oh, oops, until the IDF later admitted it was a bike. Look at the comments for yourself. Isn't that funny how that works? Are they still anti-Semites and haters of Jews because you pretended they were lying, even though the IDF admitted that they got caught? It's the same story over and over. So my point is, if they're going to lie to you and literally draw that to be an RPG when they know it's a bike until they get caught, don't you think that they would say whatever they need to say to justify killing whoever they want to kill? Probably. Yunus Tarawi points out, according to the Israeli soldier, oh, actually, hold on. This was, hold on, did I get it backwards? Oh, no, okay. So this one first. So in his investigation, he's been doing a bunch of these. I think I might have already shown this one. They revealed dozens of video materials that are revealed for the first time, showing the kidnapping of dozens of Palestinians, just like with Al-Shifa Hospital, each time, by the way, explicit calls by soldiers to burn Gaza and its people alive. And soldiers, I mean, the raiding of their homes, the displaying of their personal garments, the destruction of the property, and like TikTok and Telegram proudly praising it. I don't even know why they think they can get away with that. But this person says, these are suspect Hamas terrorists. Play with fire, you get burned. Isn't that dumb? Because he's saying suspect, and then you automatically go to you play. So if they're suspects, why do you know they're playing with fire? But this person says, are these suspects too? Just a pair of dead children. But the point is even clearer when he adds, well, according to the soldier who took that photo, you're a liar. Doesn't matter, though, because the narrative is they're all Hamas. But the image was taken by a soldier who says explicitly they were civilians, not suspects, not Hamas. He says it very explicitly, civilians. And he's the caption right there. You can read for it. There's more information. They're not hiding it, guys. It's an open game of flaunting that you can do this. Here's an Israeli platform, or was it it looks like a Palestinian platform, photographed by the occupation soldiers. Dozens of videos and photos showing their crimes in Gaza. And it's not even debatable. It's a long one. I've already gone over this, where they're posting their own images and in many cases, posting publicly their crimes because they think they can get away with it. Now, the craziest part about this, here's the Jerusalem Post. So as we're talking about this, the war crimes and public acknowledgement of war crimes and the display of those war crimes, and the numbers, the dispute of the numbers, I mean, everything we talked about today. Jerusalem Post comes out today and says a team of Israeli researchers has found that the hostages held in Gaza were murdered by Hamas, not Israeli airstrikes. Israeli researchers find. Sure. Okay, well, let's look at it. I found this to be actually really interesting. Now, the obvious point is, I'm pretty sure that we've seen how pliable pro-Zionist Israelis can be, and that they'll lie for just about anything. So if that's the case, it's not hard to see why they would just go, yeah, the data shows what I think. But here's what's interesting. It says in the subtitle, the team showed that during the Gaza war, they mean post-October 7th. So the post-October 7th of the ongoing Gaza war since 75 years, the risk of Israeli hostages, well, I guess Gaza war, specific. In any case, the point is the risk of Israeli hostages being killed in Israeli airstrikes was 10 to 28 times greater than the deaths of Gazans, which is a very weird way to say that, because it says the risk of not being killed was greater than the death of Gazans. So you'd argue the point would be to say greater than the risk of their being killed. So this whole thing was meant, it was bent in a way to make an argument, which, by the way, I argue blew up in their face, because think about what they're saying. So just to make it clear, they're saying Israeli hostages had a 28 times greater risk of dying than the amount of Gazans that were killed. Which to me, they'd be like, well, okay, that means they're killing them more. What do you think their argument is? Well, since we know that Israel is bombing, that they're not deliberately, of course, they're not deliberately targeting their own people. So what does that mean? That there's no way they could have a 28 times greater risk, because it should be even, right? So that means they must be killing their own people. Hamas must be killing Israelis. Or, now, stay with me here. They're trying to kill their own people. I know. It's crazy, right? Except the fact that it's literally not. And all of the evidence points to this right up until this point. And now you've got statistical analysis showing you that they're actually aiming at their people 30 times more. Or it's one of the most astronomical coincidences I've ever seen in my life. But, you know, you guys can decide for yourself. Here's what it says. The Israeli team of researchers calculated that during the first 2 months of the war in Gaza, the risk to their hostages, Israeli hostages, of being killed by Israeli airstrikes was an unlikely 10 to 28 times greater than the risk of death to Gazans from airstrikes, which is actually, see, the way they wrote it up here is just meant to be confusing. So what they're literally saying, the risk of Gazan dying was less than the risk of Israeli hostages dying at a time when there are far, far, far less Israeli hostages in an area that they don't know where these people are. At least that's what we're told. Okay. How do you not read that as these people are being targeted? Well, because we know they wouldn't do that. Okay. If you're conducting an analysis and you lean into an assumptive point, that's not that is a propaganda piece. You should just base on the facts and the data. What does the data suggest? It suggests they're targeting those people. And then if you want to pretend that they just wouldn't do that, well, let me demonstrate for you how we know that's not true. But it says the team therefore reached the conclusion that Hamas is probably murdering most or all of them. Wow. I mean, that's pretty embarrassing. That's not scientific, obviously. That's not even an analysis. You're in fact countering the facts to force in an emotional point. I mean, again, do I even need to say desperation? I think it's pretty clear by now. Well, let's go through some of these points. Here is Khaleesi sharing one of the many examples we have of the people on the record telling you that they were shot at. They were killed, or their families were, by Israeli shooting. This is just a quick clip of you know, Channel 12, Israeli media. Israeli hostages released from Gaza talk about how the Israeli military shot at the tractor taking the hostages to Gaza. So again, the first example, while they were fleeing, and we can prove it every which way, helicopter pilots admitted it. Tank drivers admitted shooting at the houses. The head of the kibbutz, Barry, admitted he saw them shooting at Gazan civilians. We have Yasmin Porat, I believe that's her name, admitting that she watched them kill them in the house. We know that they admitted firing on the cars going back to Gaza. We know that a colonel called it a mass Hannibal. I mean, it's a special kind of willful ignorance to try to pretend this isn't the most obvious thing we've ever seen. And she says that they killed her mother and injured her and her daughter and brother when they did that. Now, why haven't we heard from her from an Israeli IDF standpoint? You know why. Because her story is they tried to kill us on the way there and we barely got back alive because they're bombing us while we're there. Well, here's the one I just showed you. This is the new example. This is the newest example of a new leak that came out. And they're even speaking to one of the Israelis in the kibbutz. The point is, they published a leak of audio of two Israeli hostages, and you could hear them, and this has been confirmed. There's even one that's around with the subtitles, saying, yelling, and they're yelling for the IDF to save them, but the IDF killed them instead. It's very clear. They're going, no, we're in the stairwell, and you go, pop, pop. And just like those holding the SOS sign, which I'll show you next, and all those shot elsewhere by the IDF, this is the Hannibal directive. And even the guy in this says, yeah, it's never been more clear. Here is Ken O'Keefe telling you the Hannibal directive is a good excuse for war. They know that.
The Hannibal directive is that if you have civilians or military who are either at risk or for operational purposes become a liability, kill them. So the Hannibal Directive is an affirmation of what I know, and I thank Henry Kissinger. He said that the military are nothing but dumb animals to be used. I appreciate that honesty. I know that's true. I was cannon fodder. I was an idiotic, brainwashed kid who volunteered to be a mercenary for the bankers, and they will sacrifice me, and we've got 24 dead bodies from America coming back home now with coffins draped with flags. We're cannon fodder. The Israelis, as a general rule, they really do covet Jewish life on a completely different level. However, for operational purposes, the Hannibal Directive is such, they know that, for instance, these hostages, they're problematic. It gets the conversation going about, well, the Palestinian prisoners, including women and children that are being raped and have been for decades.
Right.
So it brings in all these issues, right? So they'd rather have dead Israelis and soldiers than captive ones.
And I'll add, in addition to what he's saying, because they can use them to emotionally manipulate other Jews and other people in the world. I mean, we have to see that by now, right? So as he's pointing out, the hostage is more problematic. One, because they're going to be able to discuss things they don't want them to discuss. But if they're dead, well, it's easier to mobilize people and saying we need to avenge them, even if you killed them yourself. I think that's pretty clear.
If you get a lot of dead Jewish Israelis, then you have a good excuse for war.
So here is an Al Jazeera investigation on October 7th. And I think we played a part of this already. It's just a couple of the important parts. The investigation on October 7th, over 1,000 Hamas gunmen, they say, launched attacks on Israeli army bases and neighborhoods. And they investigated what happened. Now, I think it'll probably be tomorrow. I think I'm going to go over this video that somebody sent me that's pretty not noticed. It's a smaller one, but I think it's pretty well done. And I like the way it's put together. And I think there's a lot of points I want to make, but I'm going to save it for that when I go over that. But here is the clip, just again showing you how obvious this is.
In the chaotic early hours of October 7, Israeli forces scrambled to engage Hamas fighters. Apache helicopter gunships fired onto cars driving towards Gaza, aware that some of them were carrying captives. Without guidance, some pilots said they joined local WhatsApp groups to help pick targets.
The idea that pilots have to get information from WhatsApp groups is truly remarkable. It's a sign of the initiative that people are looking for any way that they can get the information. This is an outrage. I mean, what kind of a way is that to fight a modern war?
At least 70 vehicles were hit by attack helicopters.
To me, it's inexcusable for a helicopter or any weapon system to be engaging any target if you don't know what that target is. Now, my concern is, with this footage, we cannot tell whether they're Hamas gunmen or civilians or possibly hostages. And I don't believe the helicopter pilot or the machine gun operator would be able to tell either.
These big rounds have a certain area effect and obviously come at a certain rate that if you shoot at a group of people, you're most likely going to kill everyone. You are knowingly putting your own civilians at risk.
The I unit compiled a detailed list of those killed on October 7. It found that 27 captives died somewhere between their homes and the Gaza fence. The circumstances of those deaths have not been explained.
Yeah, but they're still claiming, they just say those Hamas death. Hamas killed them. Even though we can very clearly prove that they bombed all these cars. And I'm going to show you an image that even that one guy, I forget his name off the top of my head, Oren, or one of them, I'll show you next, tries to claim that image of all those cars is proof that Hamas did it. Even though it takes a basic understanding of the reality to prove that they didn't have the capability to do that. It was hellfire or helicopters or everything else combined.
12 more civilian deaths took place in Berry Kibbutz after an attack by police and army forces on a house there containing captives.
And that's the one where they bombed, and that's the one that poor Yasmin points out. She watched them kill them.
Israel's Channel 12 spoke to survivors.
They weren't killed because they were executed. They were killed by the shooting. A tank came and shot shells at it. Unbelievable. It's very clear. I don't know how we pretend this isn't happening. It was only from the shelling.
The investigative unit asked the Israeli army for comment on its actions on October 7. They did not reply.
Of course, because that's what honest, transparent groups do, right? Just ignore the obvious claims. And now, again, I'll include this one as well. This is just the other horrifying story, which we'll talk about a little bit more from this 972 article. Hostages shot by IDF put out SOS sign written with leftover food. Remember, they shot two of them. Now, adding in everything else we're seeing here, knowing that these people probably have stories they don't want told, which, again, I'm going to elucidate a little bit more with that next show. It goes into some really interesting overlaps about where these people were in the certain checkpoints they were at that got abandoned right in the beginning. And they knew they were there, and they've continued to use these people's memory, like the Bibas family, even though you can prove that they let them die or let them get captured. In this case, hostages, well, again, I would argue die, or because I don't think they wanted to let anybody get captured based on this argument. But either way, that they let that happen, knowing, or rather, like, I mean, cut their losses. You could look at it like that. Anyway, the point is, these people got away or were let go, however you look at it. Two of them walked out, or technically three of them walked out, and two of them got shot right there. By the way, we're talking about Israelis who look like Israelis, who are speaking Hebrew, who are walking out going, "We're hostages, don't shoot us," with a sign that says SOS, and they shoot them. That's stupid enough. The one guy who didn't get shot, and this is the craziest part to me, that came out a few days later. He was 15 minutes later, he was killed. And the story came out that he was hiding, and they were going, "Come on, come out, come out, come out." And he was going, in Hebrew, "I'm a hostage, don't shoot me." 15 minutes of that. He finally comes out and two of them shoot him at the same time. Guys, this was covered by The Guardian. I don't even know how you could possibly read that situation as anything other than assassination. Or at the very least, that they got mixed orders. They thought, weren't we still killing hostages? Oh, I guess not. In any case, they killed them. And there was the ones that were killed by toxic gas. And this actually kind of went a little bit further. I thought was really interesting in a really terrifying and disgusting way. 972 Magazine, another great article. This came out January 31st of this year. A hostage's mother says toxic gas from Israeli bombs killed her son. Is she right? I think the evidence is pretty clear. The question is, was it deliberate, quite frankly? But here's what it says. She wrote, "I demand that they continue the investigation," because essentially they just shut it down. They said, "No, it wasn't that, we shut it down." But she got the report that showed that there was no, and actually she writes it in here, that there's no way it could have been something. They couldn't have been Hamas, is the point. And it says, "I told them I wouldn't let them stop. After all, we were constantly told in meetings with military and government officials that they suspected there were hostages being held near senior Hamas officials. So if you know and suspect that there are hostages around, even if you don't know who exactly, how can it be that you bombed?" You see, these people, Netanyahu likes to project like they have the support of their people. The only people that support what they're doing are the ones that still somehow believe that they're doing everything they can to protect the hostages. Most everybody in Israel now is calling for him to take the deal from Hamas from the very first week, which is all for all, because they now recognize the only reason they haven't been saved and they have been continued to be killed is because Israel refuses to take them back. This is as public as ever. She went on to say that 3 weeks after her son was abducted, intelligence officials informed the family that, quote, "There are indications that he is alive and that they actually know where he is." During the Shiva, the 7-day Jewish mourning ritual held after Sherman's body was recovered in December, Major General Ghassan Alan, the head of the Coordinator for Government Activity, COGAT, there you go, told her that he, who is in charge of the prisoners and war of missing persons, that, quote, "knew at any given moment where Ron and Nick were, and so was surprised to hear about their deaths." So COGAT is either lying to this grieving mother for God knows what reason, or accidentally admitted that we always knew where he was, which means that you bombed knowing you would kill him. Pick your poison. That's why she accused the military of killing her son for the sake of killing the person they claim he was close to, the Hamas leader. "Somebody is lying here," she said. "It is clear to me," she says, "that my son was sacrificed. I ask myself how they would act if it was Bibi Netanyahu's son in there." Good question. You should be queuing in on the fact that this Israeli Jewish person is saying they sacrificed my son's life. You won't hear this in the corporate media. It says the source explained that the army did not use a chemical or biological warhead. This is actually really interesting and terrifying. Talk about plausible deniability. It says, but rather they discovered that certain bombs, the Israeli government realized that certain bombs penetrating the tunnels could, as a byproduct, spread toxic gas over a long distance, which is a quote, in a closed compound. A second source confirmed that, adding that tests have been conducted in the military on the subject, which have shown that inhaling these gases in confined spaces is lethal, meaning they know what they're doing. And so they know, and then, by the way, they can stand back and go, we didn't gas anybody. We just fired a bomb, which, by the way, they did tests last month that proved those bombs in this space would cause toxic gas. Well, we didn't do it. Typical Zionist games. The point is, they knew what they were doing. They gassed the area where they knew he was held, knowing that it was lethal. Now, it says she accused the Israeli military of knowingly killing her son in the strike to assassinate this person. It says an Israeli security source privy to information about the attack told 972 and local call that they did not know if the army suspected that there were Israeli hostages being held near, his name is Grandor, but in order to kill the Hamas commander, assuming he's even there, the source said, the army bombed a building. This is the actual claim publicly said by the actual source, the Israeli source. The army bombed the building full of Palestinian civilians, knowingly killing dozens of them. That's the argument aside. So, no. We didn't know your son was there, but we definitely knew all these civilians were there, but they don't matter, right? How is it possible that we're at a point where that just gets passed over? Where, yeah, we killed 400 civilians in a refugee camp because one guy was there. Turns out he wasn't, though. You don't need anything else that happened this entire time frame to see that these people are criminals. It says, Grandeur was under a very large building, the source said. Quote, we bombed knowing, he says, that the entire building would collapse. This is the 972 assassination factory point. Many civilians were killed, he said. They know this, and they're pretending they're pinpoint targeting and avoiding them all. It's obvious that's not true. But it turns out he wasn't even there. Another time, they missed. It took a second strike to kill him, also with a lot of collateral damage. That's the truth. We can prove this in every possible way. The only thing challenging that is Israeli saying otherwise. Israel. All the backs up what we're saying. Now, guess what? Mr. Daniel Hagari said, quote, the IDF did not know about the presence of hostages in the area, which is explicitly disputed by Kogat, right? And other people involved, but they don't care. It says he made similar remarks again after Hamas released a video in which the hostages state that two of the hostages with whom she was being held were killed in an airstrike. Remember that one? Noah Argamani? And they said it was a propaganda video. Well, no, later it turned out to be exactly what happened. But it says, we do not attack places where we know there may be hostages. Every other data source has proven that's false, including Israeli members of parliament who have stated explicitly the opposite. It says, however, Hagari's statements are inconsistent with the testimony of senior security sources, which is revealing here for the first time. The source told 972 magazine that during the first weeks of the war, the Israeli army systematically targeted Palestinians defined as, quote, kidnappers, those who abducted Israelis during the Hamas-led October 7 attacks with its bombings, despite a concern that they expressed that there were hostages being held right next to them. Obviously, if you're claiming they're kidnappers, it's likely that they still have the people right afterward. It says, according to the source, Israeli abductees were, quote, certainly hit in these bombings. Only later did this policy change, and I don't even think that happened. So understand every single angle of this. There are people expressing the fact that they knew from every moment, from the moment it started, which, by the way, we'll get into more, even more tomorrow, the fact that even very clearly more and more some level of the government knew what was going on and let this happen. Then as they were fleeing, bombed them, continued to bomb everywhere they knew they were in Gaza, and then shoot many of them when they get free. I just don't know how we can continue denying this. Finally, it says, according to Israeli security sources who spoke with the magazine on a condition of anonymity, this wouldn't even be the first time that Israeli airstrikes targeting Hamas networks of underground tunnels in Gaza have killed people in this way. And this is in regard to the gas in the ground. The Army, they say, is well aware that bombs exploding in tunnels can disperse toxic gas, such as carbon monoxide. In May of 2021, for example, oh, weird, it didn't start on October 7th. Shocking. Amid its broader assault at that time, named Operation Guardian of the Walls, the Israeli army launched a specific attack on Hamas tunnel networks, which it called Operation Lightning Strike. Gadi Eisenkot, who was the IDF chief of staff at the time when the operation was planned and is now a member of Israel's war cabinet, said later that the operation was intended to, quote, turn the tunnels into a death trap and kill hundreds of Hamas members or anybody else that could have been there. Sort of like we're seeing now. They know what they're doing. During those attacks, which ultimately killed only a few dozen Hamas members, those hiding in tunnels were killed, quote, not only from a bomb that hit them, but also from the fact that bombings release gases inside the tunnels. Over and over and over. And here is the guy I was referencing, Arsen Ortrovsky. He goes, this is actually the first time I've seen this particular photo, which I find impossible to believe. It's been everywhere. The burned out cars of Israelis who attended the Nova Music Festival on October 7th. Just when you think you've seen it all. Right. Guys, I mean, this is what's so embarrassing. That is proof that the IDF bombed these people. By the way, all the cars are bunched up against the side because they remove. You can literally see the tractor right there. That means they destroyed the crime scene. There was all the cars were littered along the road going into Gaza, and they just pushed them all up inside. They still pretend Hamas did all that. Hamas wasn't capable of doing that. They know that. Yeah, right. Well, y'all are dumb. I mean, it's just everybody sees this. Desperation, ignorance, you can decide. But here's the Israel main account from 2 days ago saying somewhere in Gaza, there are two little redheaded boys who have been held captive by Hamas for 164 days. These are two of only like a few of the hostages they focus on. It's propaganda. And the reason, as they said in the beginning, is the redheads makes them unique. Even Israel said that. It's this weird thing for the Israeli community. And they've been making a big deal about it. And the most disgusting thing of it is they know that they've already killed them. Based on what we've just seen, probably on purpose. As I said, how long are you going to use the memory of those children that you killed while being held in Gaza? As their father publicly revealed, they tried to return their bodies. In fact, during the last pause, remember, I told you this. That's why they broke the pause. I don't think they wanted people to know they were dead. That's despicable. This was the father speaking up. They were killed by IDF bombings. And Dan Cohen even points out, and the CBS report on November 30th, 2023, they were actually forced to acknowledge that they were killed by IDF strikes, not Hamas. Instead of pressing Israeli officials on slaughtering their own people in addition to 20,000 Palestinians at the time, the reporter shrieks at a Hamas official. I remember talking about this. The point is, in this, they kind of inadvertently were forced to admit that it was an IDF bombing that killed the Bibas family. And yet, Israel, in their desperate nature and their shameless efforts, will just continue to say, look, we need to save them, knowing that they killed them. Now, to be clear, they shouldn't have been taken in the first place because that's a crime. They're civilians. They are not military targets. And yes, 100% whoever took them should be held accountable. It's important to make that clear. That does not then change the story about what Israel is doing. Now, here is this horrible underground tunnel creature who is saying Hamas needs to accept the deal on the table and release the hostages. Oh, excuse me. Her name is Debbie Wasserman Schultz. It's our only way out. Okay. Well, seeing as how what you're asking for is a pause, which is the deal they're offering, who is that a way out for? A pause guarantees they'll go back to doing what they're doing. And Netanyahu's been very clear about that. Even if we get the hostages back, this will not end the war. Okay. So knowing that, and he says that on purpose, knowing that he's setting it up to where they will not, it's obvious. He's manufacturing what he wants. But if you're saying accept the deal, only way out, we know it's going to go back. All they're really saying is the only way out for the only people we care about, which is the Israeli hostages. So you give them back. That's your way out. We're done. And then he keeps bombing all the Palestinians and you pretend like that's done. We're done. We're not looking at that anymore. We don't care about those people. Like, it just couldn't be more transparent. And on top of that, it's obviously clear that they've continued to push off those deals. But I think what's interesting is that all of this is becoming so obvious and so impossible for anybody involved in this side of the conversation in regard to Israel who has morals, any shred of integrity or, you know, still cares about human life, that it's causing them to have a lot of problems. I mean, it must. And this is what Dan Cohen is pointing out. The title is "The War in Gaza Exposes a Disintegrating Israeli Army." That's a Haaretz article. He writes, Israeli sociologist and military expert Yagil Levy, say it's a common name there, the Israeli army's chain of command is disintegrating, he says. Levy argues that the genocidal army is crumbling from within because of only political and no military achievements, which is very clear, ignoring directives and rampant hooliganism, calls for genocide, looting, women's underwear obsession, all the things they're publicly doing. It seems like nobody can rein them in. You know why? Because this is not a real professional military, guys. As much as that's, and again, that's the point they make about them going, we are a professional military and we think this, like no real person does that. And you don't come up, you know, if you're a professional military, you don't have to stress that you're real and professional. That's what a non-professional group does. And the point is that this group has been conducting, kidnapping children, suppressing women, destroying homes for the longest time. It's an apartheid occupation military. It does not know how to conduct itself like a real, you know, to operate within the rules of war. But it's clear, if even Haaretz is covering it, it's clear. And here's the article itself, which is interesting. Here's what it says. Mighty mess. IDF used Gaza. I take it back. I forgot I closed it. This is the article you can read from there. If you want to read this piece, I added another article I want to include just on top of that. That's interesting. Mighty mess. And this is also from very recently, I think March 20th. It says IDF used Gaza explosives from 1953 and shells marked for training only. You've got to be kidding me. Now, I don't know if that means because they're just that desperate for ammunition or if they just are that bad at their jobs, but it says a desire to preserve ammunition, or so they claim, irregular deliveries, and it's an Indian explosive, I'm not sure what that means, in crumbling sacks created a logistical and operational nightmare that made it difficult for artillery to assess combat forces and increase the risks of mistakes. So in one side, it might be that you're pretending that's why it's been indiscriminate, but on the other side of it, it's causing mistakes that hurt them. So at this point, if you're the IDF and you're getting destroyed over there and they're just lying about what's happening, and then you're being given incomplete, you don't have the right equipment, you don't have the right munitions, the munitions they're using are blowing up in front of you, you're going to be like, I can't do this anymore. And that's what they're doing. But if you read through it, the point is that I actually believe this is about a group that has spent the last 50 years pretending to be the best at everything, and in some cases excelling, but really, in this sense, just claiming they're good when really they haven't been the entire time. You could look at it how you like. Sort of like the Saudi Arabia not being able to tie its shoes together without U.S. military support. But to finish, a couple points I want to include. Apparently, Rafah has yet the ground invasion has yet to happen, it seems. They're still bombing in Rafah, so let's realize it doesn't really change the illegality of kettling them into a tiny area, claiming it's safe, and then bombing on top of them. And in the West Bank, remember, but Rafah ground invasion seems to still be looming. And Christopher Lockyer points out on two days ago, after a day's delay, he says he's just crossed the Rafah crossing to visit the Doctors Without Borders teams in Gaza Strip. The sea of humanity as you enter is overwhelming, he says. People are everywhere. A ground invasion of Rafah would be catastrophic and must not be allowed to happen. Everybody sees this. Here's the Times of New York Times. It's so frustrating. This wasn't behind a paywall when I had it loaded. No alternative for Rafah invasion, Netanyahu says. A rift with U.S. grows. So, you know, for time, let's just leave it there. That's so weird how that happens. Sometimes New York Times, I think it's like a time thing they do where like the Washington Post and New York Times will put out things. It's like a really big propaganda piece they want you to see. So to let everybody read it, and then it like eventually falls behind a paywall. I don't know. I was reading it. It wasn't behind a paywall. Either way, the Wayback Machine is a good way to circumvent that. What they're simply saying is Netanyahu, in the first couple paragraphs, are saying like, despite everybody, all of their allies pushing him to not do this, he's like, I don't care. We're going to do it anyway. There's no alternative for the invasion of the civilian area. Pretending it's all about Hamas. They've made the same claim about every other location. Khan Yunis, Al-Mawasi, wherever else they were. That's now the spot. That's now the new spot. That's the one. And every time, we tell that it's not going to end. Oh, now it's Rafah. And then what? What's next? Obviously, there will be something. And Mary Zonzine from 972 Magazine says, without a plan, whether by design or by default, what Israel is doing in Gaza in general is, quote, mowing the lawn. As there's a word for it in Hebrew, but it's an actual policy, as they call it, mowing the lawn. Starts with a D. I forget how to pronounce it. But she's pointing it out. This is an Israeli writer saying this is what they're doing, mowing the grass or mowing the lawn, which is what it has always done in Gaza. But now on a much larger and more catastrophic scale, the war goal may be defined differently, but the means are the same. So it shouldn't really matter that it's an Israeli Jew saying it or that it's a writer from Israel saying it. These are just overlaps. The point is, this is a person being honest about what's going on. Lawmakers blast Biden Gaza port plan as political move to win back progressives. Well, I think everything they're doing right now is calculated to win back literally either side of the paradigm that thinks he's a maniac, including his own supporters, because he's thrown his lot in with open genocidal actions and acting like we just can't discern the truth when everybody sees it. There's no winning back from that. That's pathetic. And by the way, it's left and right that are both doing that. But this point is about the port. But I actually think this is a double play. I think the port is clearly not to do with any, the port is an Israeli agenda that was that Dan Cohen covered, what, 7 years ago or 6 years ago? And then they re-presented the same plan as if it was about Gazans and we're going to move them to the port and it's their new home. No, it's the same plan you presented for other things before. Now it's being presented again as the addition to this port for humanitarian aid. All they're doing is just presenting the same plan that they've always wanted with the new agenda as the guys. It's just like the U.S. does. It's pathetically obvious. The problem, though, is this port, as we've already covered, is not what it seems, is in fact the opposite than humanitarian aid. It's about more occupation, more control. It's 1,000 U.S. ships, military personnel. I forget, those were just like the assessments. Who knows what it's going to end up being? Maybe less, maybe more, but it's still occupation. Did we talk to the Gazans about this, the Palestinians? Was their government involved? Oh, no, they're all terrorists. The point is that you can't pretend that they're making these decisions and this isn't occupied and then go right over them and build what you want on their territory. Anyway, either way, it's the same thing it's always been. And now they're talking about cutting Gaza in half, populating the north with Israeli Jews and new illegal settlements and giving them the south, which is the same thing. All you're doing is cutting what they've had in half and pretending that's a two-state solution. It's not. They're still occupied. You just took half of what they the land that you gave them before that. It's all Palestine. But here's the interesting part. As we have one side of this saying, oh, it's a left-wing plan to win back progressives. Well, what about the fact that over here, here's Jared Kushner, who is literally saying that we need to do the same thing. Well, as always, it's a two-party illusion plan.
But there are real fears on the part of Arabs, and I'm sure you talk to a lot of them, who think once Gazans leave Gaza, Netanyahu's never going to let them back in.
Maybe, but I'm not sure there's much left of Gaza at this point. So,
oh, right. Well, so, you know, I know it's all war crimes, and we've been lying about it the whole time, but now that we've destroyed the whole thing, might as well move forward. I mean, that may have worked over the last 75 years, but suddenly the world is changing for who knows why. The point is that to say that, oh, well, it's not destroyed. What you just did was acknowledge the thing that everyone's been pretending isn't happening and then using that reality to justify the next step. Well, there's not much left anyway, so let's continue doing the illegal occupation. No. Let's take a pause and acknowledge that you just admitted that you've destroyed and flattened and ethnically cleansed all of Gaza. Let's go ahead and acknowledge that first and maybe charge some crimes and put people in prison. That's just crazy. And the way Khaleesi frames this, you know, people worry that once Gazans leave, Netanyahu won't let them back. And don't forget, he publicly made them a promise that he would let them all go back. That's already off the table. They've already started building settlements in northern Gaza. We've already shown you that. At least they were like lean-to symbols, but they literally put rotted wood and put together a little structure. And they said that was the beginning. We've got open settlers telling you this is happening, speaking directly to Biden and saying, you're wrong, we're doing this. Yet they act like we're stupid and we're racist and all your politicians keep screaming two-state solution. They know what there's actually, they know what's going on. They know that's not what they want. They're doing that to pacify you to make you think they care. But she paraphrases saying, Maybe, but what's left of the place? Anyway, let me tell you about how valuable Gaza waterfront property can be. That's what they're doing. You know, but you know why this is happening? Because it's obviously about continuing to take and remove and ethnically displace. And all of it shows you that the port is just one of the beginning steps. And he's telling you that. Now, here is a thread you should read. It's short. There's like a series of tweets starting with this squirrel highlighting the ploy that is this whole chef world kitchen nonsense, saying, why did the Israeli regime allow a Spanish celebrity chef to do a BSCA route PR op for Biden as the Gaza genocide and famine is only getting worse? Because that celebrity chef, Jose Andres, fully backed the Gaza genocide and is now pretending to be a savior, which apparently he's done before. But the reality of it is it's not about helping people. So as long as you can make this big flashy push to get what you want and then keep starving them, well, it all ends up in your favor. But people aren't buying it. Lastly, here's Caroline Glick admitting what we keep telling you, which, and this is like the fourth time I've seen this acknowledged. This is coming from Israeli media, and she's saying U.S. aid, which is responsible for carrying out Biden's plan to build a port in Gaza. So there's your number one issue right there. Regime change, Trojan horse, U.S. aid, who's, by the way, constantly stealing and restructuring aid away from who needs it. Let's pretend like they're going to be there for you. They're going to make sure you build this port. And they've transferred control over the project to a partnership of Qatar and Hamas. What do you know? How does that even possibly make sense? You know why? Because they're helping bring back in the senior controller of Hamas that they're keeping safe in Qatar under the, they're continuing to build the justification to keep this in the way that they've always had it. Well, let them stay there for now, but they're all terrorists and we can't deal with them. And until they get rid of those terrorists, we can't deal. Well, you put them there. You made this happen. You funded them. Now you're putting them back into the deal. You've kept them in the conversation. On top of all of that, you're talking about working with Israel in the first place in an aid project that was presented in order to circumvent Israel blocking aid. I can't even wrap my mind around how dumb that is. Now, anybody isn't laughing about this. Because remember, they've already admitted Israel is involved explicitly in the checking of the aid before it goes through this port, involved with both on Cyprus and in here. They're involved with the process, and they've openly said that. And on top of that, they're going to be involved with the distribution, and they've already made it clear. Now, if you're going to bring back Qatar and Hamas, how do you pretend that even makes sense with what Israel's been saying? So now we're going to pretend that Israel's just going to let Hamas be involved with the process they keep shooting them for being involved with? But it says now 14 Israel's Arab affairs correspondent reported all the details yesterday. She translated below. It says, and this is the host speaking, you're bringing in an initial report that the port that is being built in the Gaza Strip will be owned by Qatar and Hamas. Arab affairs correspondent says, yes, the Americans asked the Qataris, to take on the financing and management of the operation, as we reported last Wednesday based on Arab sources. A few days ago, the Americans conferred in Cyprus with several parties, including the Emiratis and Qataris. I can report that the only one who so far has agreed to finance the port is this pier is Qatar. Now, this could clearly change. It's all still in the process. But just think about how dumb this is. Qatar, the group that's been involved in the mediation the whole time, and the same group that is literally housing the Hamas leaders in office buildings that Israel spoke up in the beginning and said they wouldn't be dealing with. Yet somehow they're going to annihilate Hamas by not taking out the leadership. And by the way, the same leadership that they have been caught funding more than once. I'll show you next. How does that make sense? Because ultimately this is about maintaining the situation, the status quo. It says Qatar has an interest in this port. Qatar wants to preserve Hamas, or so that's what we're being told, or it's a coordination, right? It wants control over a central artery of the life in the Gaza Strip, which certainly could be possible. It also wants a leverage point over Hamas. That's why it's clear why Qatar is involved. She asks, what about the state of Israel? And she answers, Israel is not involved in the issue. I don't know. That's not possible. That is the way Israel's trying to present this. It's not our territory. We're not in control. We're not occupying. They can make their choice. No, that's ridiculous. Israel's the reason this happened. That's why they're the ones being able to check the aid. And they already stated they're going to be the ones processing. To do this is just a game, hoping you don't know the reality and blindly assume what Israel says is true. It says Israel is not being included in the discussions. I'll get to Israel shortly. Why is this good for Hamas? Hamas views this as a sort of aspirin. That's what people in Gaza are telling us. Hamas is concerned about its peer, about this peer, which they fear will legitimize continuous Israeli presence in Gaza for the long run. See, guys, this is a straight up Israeli propaganda push. Hamas doesn't believe that they're not involved in Gaza. Hamas has explicitly said, like everybody else, that they're absolutely controlling every aspect of Gaza. So it's insulting. This is trying to float this out as if, like, this is, this is more tactful than most of the propaganda I see, because in a way they're trying to give you something that makes sense to make you lean into it without realizing these kind of obvious tactics, right? But it says, Israel, you asked about. Israel, from our diplomatic sources, Israel opposed. The Americans ignored us and assigned the Qataris to run the project. The Qataris don't only say yes, the Qataris came with an additional demand. They wanted this port to be built by a company named Al-Hisi from Gaza. A bit about the company. Today, contractors in Gaza are very angry at this company. It's owned by Yasser Al-Hisi. The company is a primary supplier for engineering, electricity, and infrastructure for Hamas. A lot of the Muslim municipalities, local governing councils, transportation infrastructure in Gaza City, Khan Yunis, and other localities. It's controlled by the Palestinian officers. It's also transfers, according to contractors in Gaza. He says, wait, you're bringing a lot of information. I want to make this clear to our audience. Can you say that this company, Al-Sisi, is a Hamas company? It's controlled by Hamas? He says, yeah. She says, yes, it's controlled and a subsidiary of Hamas. It wins massive contract. I mean, do I need to go any further? Are we really going to pretend that that Israel is going to allow Hamas, the group that they're claiming they want to destroy in this area, to build a port in that area? That they would let anybody do that? The U.S. and Qatari to go around them, that they said, no, they did it anyway. I mean, I actually find this insulting to our intelligence. And it's the same story. The rest of it is just, if Hamas was there, I'm concerned. So the point to take away from this is U.S. aid, and then all of a sudden, regime change, or just Trojan horse, the whole thing. It's just propaganda effort. So we're going to bring in this group in, and it's all about the propaganda narrative, and all they're doing is creating justification to do what they ultimately want to do. Now, all of a sudden, if there's a Hamas issue right there, we can't stop now. They're building entire ports. I just find that to be pretty ridiculous. Now, how do you factor that in? Oh, wait. See, I'm telling you, man, there's something weird with this. Something I'm doing in this is deleting tabs. I'm not sure how that works, but hold on a second. I'll include these for you because I had them in there. The tweet that I always show you, but also the Mossad one that I think is important. It is Mossad Chief right there. So I'm just grabbing these on the other browser because they pop up for me. By the way, I'm still locked out on Twitter on all these other browsers. Here is the tweet from Haaretz. So my point was, how do you factor in this whole conversation, right? So if you're literally saying that Hamas is building this and they're going to allow that, if you think that, so let's just pretend that is actually being allowed to happen. Well, it would only be because it is exactly what Israel wants. As Haaretz wrote 2 days after October 7th, anyone who wants to thwart the establishment of a Palestinian state, meaning a two-state solution, has to support bolstering Hamas. Now, I want to reiterate again, because this documentary I want to go over tomorrow, it's exactly what we're talking about. And the reality is that the billions of dollars that have been given and petitioned for from Qatar, rather to allow, because Mossad went to Qatar to do this, went to buying weapons. It has been publicly acknowledged. And so when we say arm and fund them, that's what they've done. And he says, this is part of our strategy. And I'll include the Wayback Machine version of the Haaretz article. It also highlights this. The simple fact that they sent Mossad Chief to Qatar to petition them to continue Hamas support. 2020. So when you see articles like this, which is written, on March 19th. Israel, quote, will confiscate 16% of Gaza lands by establishing the buffer zone. That's the idea. That's the petition. It's the left, the north-south divide. It's all coming out, and they're openly telling this, and they just Your politicians just don't want to acknowledge it. And moment by moment, people are starving. And it's never, I mean, this, and for me, guys, this has actually surpassed how obvious the COVID-19 illusion was. And that was pretty damn obvious. Now I'm going to end today with a video from Sarah Wilkerson talking about the port. And this is the word, this is why I put it in the title, because I just, this whole thing right here, this one statement, this one discussion, this point is so, I mean, it's almost like a good way to frame everything they're doing as a Zionist government. Not every IDF member, every Jew or every Israeli, but definitely the Zionist government, that they're building this port. And what she describes is so horrific. That, now, there's another reason to argue why they might have chosen to destroy everything other than the obvious, is they decided to take all of that rubble to build this pier. And what she highlights is undeniable. We know for a fact that these buildings are, and we heard examples of them admitting they did this, destroying buildings full of civilians. Her point is that they're scooping up all this rubble. It is a guarantee that it's full of dead bodies in some cases, or that there's part or blood or body parts. And they're literally building this port out of the dead, the rubble full of dead bodies of Palestinians. There's never been a more perfect microcosm of everything we're talking about. You are literally building on the death that you've caused. It's everything about this conversation. It's everything to do with Zionism. And it's so horrific that we just need to acknowledge that this is in real time happening and that we can prove it. And they just don't care. That when you're walking on that port, if you end up doing so, that you're walking on the death of civilians. I just don't know how better to encapsulate everything we're watching. It really does make me sick. I'll tell you guys, I've never seen I've never had to deal with more emotional, kind of like conflicting issues in my life. And you're all right here with me. I hope you feel the same, because this is not normal. We shouldn't have to deal with stuff like this. There's a special kind of evil that we're talking about here. And I mean evil, like the point that when you can push yourself to this level, knowing what you're doing and not just letting it happen, but laughing about it, praising it. And then, as I said before, even asking for praise for doing the thing that you're not doing while knowingly starving children to death, while knowingly gassing people that you claim you're fighting for, and then just watching this happen day by day and continuing to see that they're not only laughing about it, they're using what was theirs, their homes, their possessions, their dead bodies to continue to build another ploy to continue to keep them suppressed and kill them. It's a level beyond what I ever thought was possible. Even as I know and cover these groups in the past, to see how much we've seen, it is going to change our understanding of this. And they have forever changed what people see Zionism as. And I'm telling you, as we go forward, however long, 10, 20, 30 years, people will look back and Zionism will be regarded with the same kind of view that Nazism is today. And quite frankly, it's not that far of an, it's the reach is clear. The connection is clear, but it's not even because of the connection. It's because of what it is being seen for. They can't pull back that, they can't put that toothpaste back in the bottle. People in the world, they see what they're doing. And going forward, no matter how much propaganda, how much put, people will spread these stories. It will become something that will eventually be known as we do, as we understand these the histories we do now. And it will be forever seen as the crime, the atrocity, the genocide that it truly is. And if not, in large part because of your efforts and what you're doing and the fact that you're courageously continuing to push this stuff out there and support platforms that have the courage to talk about it. We couldn't do this without you guys. I mean, you always need to remember that. As I've said many times, you are the last American vagabond. We can't do this without you. So thank you for supporting us in these terrible, terrible situations. You know, but again, in a time where it is flirting with the turn, with, you know, we can see the corner, right? We can see the crack in the door. We can see that there is a time right above, right ahead, that may just be free of stuff like this if we actually choose to fight for that and ignore the partisan games that always pull us back in. Please help me fight for that. Help me get the people that are good intentioned that still sway in one direction or the other and help us fight through the middle to see through this so we don't have to keep fighting again in the next agenda, next propaganda push. But that is the way the world works. So thank you, though, for continuing to help us to at least try for something better. I love you all. Thank you for being here and helping me fight. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
We've got to talk about this port, this American-funded and built port on Gaza's beach. We've got to talk about the impact of it and what's to come. There's a couple of factors. I'm not going to talk about the gas. There's a couple of things. And one is, when they took the builder's rubble to start building this pier, they took it from the remains of the bombed Palestinian homes. So they stole, basically, the stone that these houses were made of. They bombed them, and then they collected up the rubble and started to build a port. There's thousands of people lost, still missing, that are under the rubble. So when you manage to get an excavator and you take it to these places and you pick up all of this rubble and then you cart it all the way down the seacoast road to build this pier, in that will be the remains of Palestinians who are still missing. When you walk on this pier, you're going to be walking literally on the remains of Palestinian people. You're going to be walking across a pier or driving, which is more to the point, over the remains of the dead who never got a burial, who never got named, and who never got rescued. Children, the skulls of children will be amongst this rubble. A road of the dead. When these homes were bombed, Palestinians only had their hands to dig out their relatives who could be heard screaming and crying for help for over 72 hours. Both the Israelis and the Americans said, oh, no, no, we can't get you any excavators. We can't get any bulldozers. You know, we can't get you. The civil defense teams didn't have the equipment to pull these people out from underneath the concrete. And yet it took America less than 8 hours to deliver 30 brand new bulldozers and excavators and heavy machinery, all the stuff that you need to build a port. When the Palestinians were crying to get their relatives out, the Israelis had torched all of the civil defense equipment. So there were no bulldozers. They died crushed to death, slowly and in a lot of pain, screaming and crying for help for over 72 hours. Just think about that. But in 8 hours, the Americans are able to suddenly deliver a whole brand new range of bulldozers and excavators. They can do that to build a port, but they can't do it to save the lives of hundreds of Palestinian people. So that kind of crosses out the word humanitarian. You're talking about, oh, this is a humanitarian port. Well, it wasn't very humanitarian to deny the Palestinians the bulldozers that you've been able to ship from Cyprus within 8 hours. Those people lay there for 72 hours waiting to be rescued under the rubble of their homes, but you couldn't get a bulldozer out for them. Gaza's beach, the place that all Palestinians go in the hot weather, the place they swim, where children have flown kites, where they gallop their horses up the beach. There's wedding venues. There were restaurants and cafes. People flock to the beach in the summer to cool themselves down and use the beach as a way to get away from the misery and suffering in the colder months. What about the fishing industry? It's gone. The beach is controlled. It's taken over by American troops and mercenaries being paid, private firms being paid to secure the area. So 2,000 troops will suddenly become 20,000 troops. The whole beach is a military zone, a barracks with a controlled entry and exit point where large cargo ships will be able to moor and ship away Palestinians into permanent exile. There are so many reasons why this port is not humanitarian, but this port must go. This port cannot exist, because if it does, then Gaza doesn't exist. Thank you for listening.